Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul is the channel. Sports in Depth is the show, dear Lord. Always opens up as we open with a prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day, another Sabbath. To you all honor and glory, we pray. We thank you, dear Lord, for little things that we so largely take for granted. We thank you for being our God. We thank you for health, life, and liberty. We ask you, Lord, that you not so much give us what we want. Give us what we need. But what we want and what we need is you. Thank you for another day. And we thank you that man once said, although we do not live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on a Park Avenue bench. And a lady once said, you're God all by yourself. And you may not be everybody's God, but you are the one and only true God. We just take this time to thank you, Lord. We ask these blessings. And name your darling son, Jesus, who died that we may have the right to the tree of life. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses. Forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thou art the kingdom, power, and glory forever. In the holy name of Jesus, amen. Doc Stanley, Sports and Devil on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Devil, the show. This is a month ending, and we will birthday salute, and we will do some interviews from Bat Day. That's the Baseball Assistant Trust Program. I got to get the right thing on that, too. That's the Baseball Assistant Team, and that's Teamwork, Caring, and Sharing. Like my man Steve Coach, who was so great for us, in that last Tuesday at the Marriott Marquis. I finally got a chance to see Louis Aparicio live. Couldn't get to with him. Great affair. Willie Mays was there. Thomas Seaver. Eddie Cranepole, there was a salute to the Mets 50-year celebration, and just a host of, got Jesse Barfield. We have some interviews for you. We're going to do some interviews. We got some people on the interviews. We got the interviews for you. Willie Montanez was there. Dusty, there's the name coming, bringing back to memory, isn't it, Willie Montanez?
Oh, man, yeah, the little dancing second baseman.
He ran over
the bases. Remember he used to run backwards?
Well, you also remember, you know, you're talking about a second baseman. They had the outstanding feeling. Felix Mejian was there.
Felix Mejian was there?
You know, looking deft and smooth as ever. Rafael Santana. Rafael Santana said something that was really paramount there, Lady A. And he talked about his playing time with the Yankees. But he said the thing about the, I said, you know, you were one of the few guys. Dallas Strawberry was there, Sheffield.
But
Strawberry and Santana were two guys who played on both sides of the border, National League,
mm-hmm.
American League Yankees. And I asked Rafael, you know, how was it playing in New York? You know, was it? And he said something that I'd heard from a lot of people. Sean Dunson, number one amateur.
Sean Dunson was there?
No, Sean wasn't there, but he was the number
man.
One amateur pick in the draft at Jefferson High School. Considered
Chicago
to have the greatest
Cubs.
Throwing arm. Considered, mm-hmm. in fact, the hoopster who is joining us now. The hoopster who joined us, and now he went to school with Sean. In fact, Sean went there. Sean Dustin went there.
And Sidney Green. And
also
Sidney Green
the running back that played with Green Bay, Brockington, went there. And Dunston was considered to have the greatest throwing arm of any shortstop
absolutely.
In the history of baseball. I remember
he
Mark
got a
Price.
Rifle.
Oh man, we became close. Mark Grayson wore 17 on the cup in salute to Keith Hernandez. And I remember big boxing fan Grace is, and we were talking and they were packing, and he put a glaze. Hey man, you want this glove? He said, man, Sean done messed it all up. You know what I mean? His darn arm. And he was the first player to give me a glove, which leads me to a good segue. DocStanleySports.com. That's my memorabilia line. Take a look there. As you know, I'm en route to Fortaleza. So we are donating and we are selling. And, you know, in fact, this baseball thing, I look at that. Now that we did this bat day, we're going to do the fact I've got, I'm going to kick off my bat day stuff. It was really so good to catch up with. And that's the thing about the old-timers days that you really like is getting the chance to see, you know, first guys blessed to get into business, not only the guys that we used to see as players, but the contacts and friends that some of us made. I mean, Marion Birkin,
hey, Doc.
Has done, here's Eddie.
I just want to say hi to the panel. I just want to make a comment on your little bat day thing.
Bat day? Yeah. You know,
hello,
hold on just a second.
Can I make a comment?
Oh, you got 42 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead,
my time starts now. Okay. Doc, what I want to do is, as a contribution to you know, your whole entire collection, what I would like to do is, I would like to buy a bat that you have there with
God
Manny
bless.
Ramirez.
Excuse me. Uh-oh.
I'm going to buy the bat, the Manny Ramirez. I'm going to give it to Dusty.
Then you beat yourself in the head for picking Green Bay over the Giants? That's what you need to do.
Boy, she's moving into comedy and everything
Manny
now. You know, Manny promised me a bat, too, and I never did get it. I remember, that's a long story to tell with Manny, too. But the thing, too, is Marion always said that Lady A always comes right on time, is that he said, you know, in my... But he said, you know, the thing is, not only have I done the interviews, but it made some friendship. And it was good to see Darryl. I hadn't seen Darryl in a long time. You know, Sheffield talked about, I think she has an interview there, how people didn't understand the pressure that was put on him as a rookie being Doc Gooden's nephew after
yes,
Doc
absolutely.
Performed so well
yeah.
at a young age. He
mm-hmm.
said they expected me to perform mm-hmm. just as well. You know what I mean? And,
no,
you know,
Doc,
we
one of the things. You talk about Gary Look. Sheffield, but one of the things that I really respect about Gary Sheffield, I saw him on an interview, and I don't know if the rest of the panel kind of caught this on TV. I think it was on a Yes Network,
mm-hmm.
where he was interviewed, and it might have been Michael Kay, but I'm not sure, where he said that,
yeah.
you know, being on the Yankees, being an African-American on the Yankees,
mm-hmm.
all the pressure that he felt as an African-American, because it was like it seemed as though – you know, being the only African American, he was sometimes felt like he was in a limelight and in the light a little more than other players, and you know,
mm-hmm.
like he was held accountable and held to a higher standard than others. And I thought, mm-hmm. like, wow, as far as the Yankees organization goes, you don't really have too many Black African American ball players
mm-hmm.
that can really say, you know,
you bring
I play for the Yankees.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
no.
yeah.
So what you say, because I remember with Ken Griffey Jr. about 15 years ago, and we were in the locker room, and I said, you know, kid, you know, there are less African-American baseball players in Major League Baseball now
mm-hmm.
than there was 20 years ago. And George Willis did that great story about
Absolutely.
That. And now the Yankees,
mm-hmm.
the Yankees were... The Yankees were the next to last team to get a Black player, and that was Elson Howard, who turned out to be the first Black player to win the MVP award in the American League. And Sheffield was the guy who said, you know, everybody's talking about this steroid stuff. How come Roger Clemens' name never comes up? I mean, this guy's at advanced age. He's performing
yeah.
so well. How come he's never suspect?
But
and,
you know
and
what?
He
you
did,
know what? Now that you talk about that too, Doc, that point – one of the key things that always struck me was the fact that when that story came to light, everybody thought when the book Juice came out that, you know, he's out of his mind. You know, Jose Canseco is what he's talking about. And when that list came out, I said, isn't it funny how it took so long for Alex Rodriguez's name to come out? And yet and still, he's sitting there talking about everything that went on in the Rangers, in the Texas Rangers locker room and the A's locker room, where people were actually injecting themselves, you know, like getting guys to inject them for them in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how could guys be injecting each other and this and all of this doesn't come to light till later where you have so many people involved?
Your point you bring up, too, is what I said. I remember Eddie Murray told me about 3 years before the list came out, and, you know, me and Eddie are close. Eddie was saying, hey, Eddie said, you know, they got a list there, he said.
Yeah.
And he said, you'd be surprised at some of the names. And he said, you know, and he said, you know, this is a guy over there on the Yankees. And we knew it wasn't Jeter.
Right, it was over 100 names or something like that, right, Don? Like, on that list?
But you see, it's an all homeboys network.
I think Jesse was 100, 200. But the amazing thing that, and we've said the Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports Network show, we've said this a million times on the show, okay? How it's amazing that the three names that were leaked from the list happen to be minorities.
Yeah.
You know, Alex Rodriguez, you know what I mean?
Number
Manny
one.
Manny Ramirez. You know, and Big Poppy.
Big Poppy was upset.
Off the list, the names that leaked off the list were A-Rod, Big Poppy, and Manny Ramirez. And Big Poppy said, you know what, fellas? You know, you're coming at me now. I've always been good with you media-wise. I've been stressed. Hey, back off. Give me a chance. And don't crucify me. But the thing that I've said, and Mel Cosell validated this the show before last. It was Art Russ Jr. back in the 80s who told us two things. Steroids was in baseball, and it was the pitchers that brought it into the game. Not the everyday players. It was the pitchers who first brought steroids into the game.
I could believe that.
Well, you told the story of the pitcher who threw the pitch and his arm was gone. I remember the story that there was a pitcher in the bullpen watching another pitch, and he said, okay, all right, they've done that. Catfish Hunter was hysterical. We told the story last week of Catfish talking about we talked with Marichal, because Marichal was there, and you know the great thing about Marichal had won the most games in the 60s. He had the most complete game. He retired from baseball. He had 243 wins and 244 complete games. And me and Catfish were talking about how it had started to change with the pitchers, and Catfish said, you know, well, the reason why they had the guys out in the bullpen because they didn't want them in the game in the first place. You know? But we're going to start with Jesse Barfield. Jesse Barfield, 1986 American League home run champion, one of the great defensive right fielders of all time, one of the greatest throwing arms of all time, and a guy that played for the Yankees. Let's listen to Jesse Barfield, one of the Bat Day stars here at Sports and Depth, as we salute Bat Day. Say happy birthday, the legendary Don Thomas, entertainment editor of the New York Beacon Bay Red News, not forgetting the birthday of our own, the Daniel Baby Lawrence on the 24th.
I say.
And remembering on the 31st of this month, the man who broke the color line, the first four-letter man in the history of UCLA, one of the greatest athletes to ever grace the track, basketball field, and baseball diamond. And the baseball diamond was the one he said we had his least efficiency. The one number 18 as a basketball player and number 28 as a football player, Jack Roosevelt Robinson. But now, let's talk and listen to Jesse Barfield at Bat Day as some of the great players of yesteryear. Reminisce and talk about yesteryear.
Champion, but more importantly, you consider one of the greatest defensive right fields ever. Guys, and Clemente was amazing. But from an offensive standpoint, going up teacher we ever had. People don't realize that. He doesn't get enough credit for that. But he was good. Cito was definitely our best batting coach. I didn't have a chance to play for him. I got traded, and then Jimmy Williams got fired as a manager like a week later. So, needless to say, as a manager, he did a great job in Toronto as well, winning back-to-back World Series. And
for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake with the Rainbow Soldier Channel. Sports and Death of the show. We get back to some more Bat Day interviews. I got some of Willie Mays. I'm looking to get Seaver and Marshall, who was very interesting.
Hey, Doc.
Yeah.
Talking about Seaver, you know he got his own wine thing called GTS?
Yeah. I'm looking
George
at the,
Seaver.
Where's the card now? I got
GTS.
The, what's his card? He has Tom Seaver. Tom
TGS.
At SevaVineyards.com. That's his. You know what? See, I just gave
and
him
you
a commercial.
Guys know I love wine, so that's right there.
Oh, boy.
Go ahead and
get nothing to drink.
Seva
Vineyards.
You
know I'm a wine connoisseur. You guys know that I'm part of a wine club.
The label is.
Well, you know what? I'm going to run his interview with you. And Tom was funny. Tom, guy asked the baseball because Tom said, I'm selling wine. This is not about baseball. He said, I'm selling wine here. You know what I mean? And so, better get to the interview. And, because, you know, Dusty Baker is I mean, I told Tom Seaver one time, I said, I used to think you were great. I said, but then, and he looked at me, and I said, but you were great, great. And then he told me something, is what Jesse talked about, what Nolan Ryan is telling his pitchers. And I remember telling Seaver, I said, Dad, if you were around today, you could win 500 games under the setup that you go 7-8. And this is what he said. He said, bullshit. He said, you have to pitch every. That's what he told. I mean, Tom's direct. Tom said,
United States Marine.
Hey, and then, you know what? He said that because.
United States Marine. That's my man.
Boy, beauty and brains. But nobody tops you. That was one of the big reasons the late Bill Shannon talked about when Ted Williams came to Shea. It was Tom that pushed him out in the wheelchair. And a lot of that was due not only because of the admiration and respect as a baseball player, but they were Marines, jugheads.
Mm-hmm.
And Seaver said, you got to pitch every 4 days, and you got to go at least 7 innings. You know, and Jesse brought a good point about these guys are saving their investments. But at the dinner that night, too, was the great Sandy Koufax. Koufax had 27 complete games in 65 and 66. I told you Marshall had 244 complete games. I mean, it's just a whole different ball game. I'm kind of saying I can get that Willie Mays interview. That was really funny, too. But it was just, you know, Tom was there. Sheffield was there. Mackie Sasser was there. Ed Cranepool.
Get out of here.
Yeah, Mackie, and Tom Seaver talked about that. Once again, he's going to stop Steve. Once again, thank the PR people, Steve Croach, who got us, make sure we got the. And, you know, and Tom talked about that whole idea of the Met players. Hey, man, you know, we're not buying this lovable clowns nonsense. That's out the window. We're going out to win. You know, we're going out to be champions. Sheffield was there. That's what Marichal was there. Rafael Santana. Willie Montanez, Felix Mian. Mian didn't come in on the thing. We had
I wish the Mets luck this season, Doc.
Listen,
I'm not even going to tell you what METS stands for. METS stands for. Listen to me. They are not even going to – listen, I'll be happy if they make it to a subpar 500 season. Come on.
You know, it's funny because the manager was there, Terry Collins.
Come on, man.
They got no chance.
You'll be lucky if the Mets make it out of spring training this year.
Listen, all I got to say is this, Doc. Any team that trades a guy like Jose Reyes, you got to be out of your mind.
You know, now, you bring up a point, too, because Reyes but Reyes said, you know what, look, two things here. They didn't seem to want me, and nobody called me. You know, he said, if you have financial, no, call me in. Hey, Dusty, come in. Hey, C-Wing, look, Dusty, we'd like to have you, man. You know what I mean? But we can't give you a 7-year deal. Our money is tight, but we will do the best we can. C-Wings, we need your show. You know, he said, no, nobody just even called me.
Yeah, but even in the winter meetings, Doc, what he said was one of the things that really got to me, and I think we discussed it in one of the shows, which was that he said that, what made him decide right off the bat that he was going to go to Miami was the fact that the day that he was eligible, they flew out. They flew out within the hour to go talk to him and try to get him to go to Miami. He's like, that's how badly they wanted me. And they showed me in doing that I was the one that was going to be part of their team and bring their team to where they had to go to. You know what? You gotta respect the guy like that.
You also got to understand, Doc, like I told you millions of times, the franchise was Jose Reyes, not David Wright.
Thank you.
They paid him welfare money, and they gave David Wright Donald Trump money.
That's right.
The franchise was Reyes. And I still feel right now, of the $106 million, they could have paid him at least $120, $130. That's how much he was worth.
Dusty. Listen, talking about him being the franchise player, if you go to games, if you were to just go to a couple of the games, you see how many Dominican fans from the neighborhood he draws?
Yeah. I mean, the bodegas are closed, man. They were all going to see him, man. And the fact of the matter is that here's a man who, his Prince Fielder, like I started to say, he wanted $200 million. The Tigers said, okay, we give you $14 million. We need you. Boom. That's the way it should be done. If he's that good for that team and kept the team alive and with all his records and all his batting titles and stolen bases, the man would turn a single into a freaking triple, man,
It comes down to is this.
He would steal home if he could.
The Mets have champagne taste with beer money. Okay,
yeah.
You're never gonna win unless you get guys like the Yankees.
Champagne taste with beer. Hey, listen, gang, don't nobody move. Hey, we go fly. Gary Sheffield stops and talks with the doctor next here on our bat special, and he had some champagne taste, and I think he had champagne money. Gary Sheffield, talk to us, gang. Nobody move, Mr. Sheffield. The floor is yours.
You know, it's the new wave now. Everybody does that. What they call it, the travel baseball team. So really, high school baseball really don't exist anymore. And so that's what probably number one. And so when you got guys going around on travel teams, and that's the way they get found, basically the players are coming to the scouts, and those scouts going to the players.
That when you, that wheel of the bat that I used to you come, who told you how to do that? Because I was saying, man, you know,
that's just something like I picked up on at rookie ball. When I first started using the wood bat, I, you know, there's a lot of things that pictures that I saw that I didn't see in high school that I had to get used to. And so that was a way to slow my bat down a little bit to be able to time the picture.
What pictures did you didn't see in high school that you just seen in the major?
Well, basically all you saw is a fastball, curveball in high school, and we weren't allowed to swing a curveball on first pitch. And so that's how we was taught to hit. You know, it's like my coach said, if you swing a curveball on the first pitch, they're going to pull you out the game. And so we never was allowed to swing on a regular ball. So it makes you understand about the fastball. You know, how you hit the curveball is don't miss the fastball.
Did you find in the National League you got more fastballs as opposed to the American League?
I think that you look at the whole game itself, that's the way it fits. You know, pitchers go about, you know, attacking the hitters, but certain players, the pitcher is going to be the same. You know, if me or Barry Bonds or whoever walk up there, they're going to pitch us the same, whether it's nationally or medically.
Interesting facts that he interjected. We talked about the pressure put on him as a young player. But you know what I like, Dusty, that he said too, no matter what the league, there's a certain way you have to pitch a certain batter, so it doesn't matter what league he's in. Dusty, we pitch low and away with sliders. Doc, we come in tight. Curve balls and off-speed stuff to see wings. You know, the book is on you, and now, regardless of the league, especially with free agency, you know, it was a very educational, minute aspect that he said, you know, you're going to pitch certain guys certain ways, regardless of what inning, what league, and what situation it is, Dusty.
Because that's their weaknesses. You know, that's where scouting reports come in. This is why you have scouts. How to pitch a batter A and batter B and batter C, because this is where this is where you get into the Freddie Roach philosophy. It says, I don't study styles of boxers. I study and look for their bad habits. And these are things that are inherent in every athlete. And batter and baseball players are no different. So they look for those weaknesses that a batter, you know, I used to get angry at Dave Winfield. Winfield stood maybe a foot away from freaking home plate. They pitched him outside, what happens? Winfield will whiff three or four times. I said, damn it, move closer to that freaking plate. The idea was to pitch him outside, and sure enough, he ate the bat for lunch, man. So that's basically what the man is saying. You look at what the batter is. This is where the scouting report comes in, and it's so very important. There's no way to figure out. There's no science. If the guy's a switch hitter, well then you pick up what his weaknesses are on both sides of the plate. And this is
pitching is what wins ball games. I mean, obviously you got to sit there and watch. And some guys. You know, some guys dictate their pitches, watching them on the mound, too. You know, it's about the batters, and they tip their pitches. You know, some guys may have habits or there's pitches where they tip their pitches, too. So, I mean, you know, it's all about, you know, studying each other, you know.
Well,
somebody said something, too, Jesse. Who was it that they said that, you know, with the implementation of the videotapes, you know, can be advertising, cannot be. You know, the night, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network Show. Sometimes, you know, but, you know, Seaver, Koufax, Marischal, Gibson, no matter what, you know, they're coming, you're gone. But the night that Harvey Haddix threw those 12 perfect innings of baseball against the Braves, you know that the Braves knew every pitch he was throwing that night, they had Hank Aaron was hitting near 400, and they told Hank, "Hey man, we got somebody that can let you." Hank's now, I don't need to know, you know what I mean? But Hank was the only guy who went to the plate and didn't know what Haddix was throwing that night, and Haddix had 36 up and 36 down. So you know, I guess when you're rocking and rolling, you know, it kind of works. Now we did we got the Sea Wings. We got the hoops, the real cool little basketball. Then we got to try to catch up with Malcolm. So, and then we're going to go back to some more of these bat things. Want to tell everybody.
I want to ask Doc a question. Can I ask you a question, Doc?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Who do you think has the best arm in the outfield?
Ever?
Throwing arm in the outfield.
I think the best throwing arm ever by a right fielder was Clemente. The best throwing arm by a center fielder was Willie Mays.
Right.
And, left field-wise, you know, Barry didn't have that great of an arm.
How about Paul Blair?
Well, no, Blair didn't have a great arm. Blair was
how about Dave Parker did?
Hey, Doc, how about currently? How about currently?
Yeah.
Current guys, well, you know, the Ichiro is still a major.
Oh, Ichiro,
I'm
going to tell you who I think from the outfield has a gun for an arm.
Who?
Vladimir Guerrero.
Well, he always had it. You see, the thing about him, though.
Oh, that guy.
No, but the thing about him, me and the late Bill, to have a gun is one thing, but you have to. The thing that made Clemente so superior, and this is the thing about the great baseball, you know, you can't dribble the ball between your legs until you know how to dribble the ball straight up. You know, you can't dunk until you know how to lay up. And the thing about Mays, the thing about Clemente, the thing about. There's an article the Times had, you know, a player who knew had the cutoff man. K-Line, Maris, Parker, Dwight Evans, Jesse Barfield, they could hit the cutoff man. Or they would throw the ball.
Mijo, let me tell you this.
Hold on. Hold tight, young lady. Hold tight now. Okay? Doc Stanley Show, hey, baby. Okay? What happens here is.
I thought it was my show.
I know you did. I know you would say that. But the thing is, and you can dub it. You know, they threw the ball where it could be cut off. Although as an infielder, if I can see he can't get the guy at third, if I can see he can't get the guy at the plate, then I could cut the ball off and get the guy at second base. The knock on Guerrero, the late great Bill Shannon, and he has a great arm, but he would throw the ball so it could not be cut off, and you could not do anything else with it. So if he didn't get his man, Shannon talked about how great Willie Mays was. He said, you know, there was times where Willie would make that throw that nobody else could touch because Willie going to get his guy. I remember the first time I saw Willie Mays. Polo Grounds, 1963. I walked to the ballpark. Willie Mays is turning first base. His hat falls off. He has a triple. He made a throw that game I'll never forget. He goes to the corner of the left field wall. He calls off Willie McCovey. What a great team. McCovey in left field. He was in center. Harvey Keene in right. Cha-Cha Cepeda at first base. Pagan was at short. Davenport was still at third to go global. They had Chuck Hill was at second base with the first Grand Slam in history of World Series play. Ed Bailey behind the plate. Mays goes into the corner. Calls off McCovey. Picks the ball up. Throws the ball from the warning track on a fly to home plate. Ed Bailey has to reach up to get the ball. The guy just slides in, but he throws the third base, and he gets the guy. And who was it? Lauren Janney. I forget he had an old third baseman for the Giants. He said, you know, impact of Willie Mays' throw. It's just amazing. But Guerrero, no question, great arm. But the point is you have to make that throw of the position. And the thing about Clemente, he threw the ball and sets the line that he could get you, and, well, 9 times out of 10, he would.
No reason.
But the thing is, you can cut the ball off and do something else with it. Go ahead, Lady A.
What I'm going to say is I saw Vladimir Guerrero in a game catch the ball off a fly ball. A guy tried to take home plate off the fly and gun the guy. No caught off, no nothing, right to home plate.
Lady A.
And kill the guy.
That's understandable.
Listen, that guy's amazing.
That's understandable on that play. I'm not saying he doesn't have a great arm. I'm not saying he's not a Hall of Famer.
Right.
What I'm saying is the knock on Guerrero is that kind of throw he made was the kind of throw he would always make. At certain times, if a guy's going from first to third, you got to throw the ball on the line. So if we don't get him at third, I can cut him off and get the guy at second base.
I understand what you're saying, but
one of the great throwing offs. But for my money, who's to ask me? When it comes to right fielders, and I think I have a problem when I started my all-time outfield because Hank hit the 714 home runs, but there was nobody, Nadia, Nunca, nobody who played right field better than Roberto Walker Clemente. I mean, Clemente, line drive to right field, Clemente would throw guys out first base. Here's a base hit to right field. He would throw guys out at first base. Willie Mays said he threw me out one time at first base. And I didn't think anybody could ever do that. That right there told me he was the greatest right fielder that ever lived.
Yeah, he saw you lumbering from home to first base. He says, I got this sucker. Zam, on the line. We are talking about men with good arms in the outfield. We have forgotten one guy, Larry Heisel.
Remember that guy from Canada, too, Dusty, Larry Walker.
Larry Walker. And
You know who I like, too? You know who was the best guy that I really like? Remember Greg Maddux? Greg Maddux? Remember who he was a center fielder for the Yankees after Mercer left and played under Billy Martin?
Yeah.
He used to.
I don't know if his first name was Greg.
Was it Greg Maddux,
a pitcher, or am I confusing things?
Yeah, Maddux is, was he with the Braves?
Well, hold it, but I think, you know what, then I've
got it. Elliot Maddux, Doc.
There you go.
Wrong first name.
Listen, I was just testing y'all. Good morning.
What about
Dave Winfield in left field? I've seen him throw a guy out at first base.
Now, okay, hold it. You know what? That was the greatest throwing left fielder. When Winfield played left field, that's the greatest arm in left field ever. Ironically enough, Sea Wings, when they picked the all-time Yankee outfield, Babe Ruth right field, Joe DiMaggio center field, Dave Winfield left field. You're right. That was the best throwing. Winfield left, Mays center, Clemente right. And the thing about it is that all three of these guys could be interchangeable. A lot of time Mays played left field, a lot of time Mays played right field, you know, when he was coming off an injury or something like that. And Clemente could both ways, too. There it is, Hoopster. Thanks a lot, C-Wings. Dave Winfield, only guy drafted by every major, the NBA, the ABA, the NFL, the AFL, the NBC, and Major League Baseball. I think they say even there was two women's softball teams that tried to draft him, too.
You forgot Reggie. Reggie was a three-letter man, too. He was also
you know what? Dusty,
you forgot A-Rod.
It's just frightening that we're going into another year with me agreeing with you. This cannot continue, Dusty. Hang up. But you're right. People forget what an outstanding throwing arm Reggie Jackson had.
Reggie Parker.
He had a cannon for a gun, but the thing with Reggie, I think some guys too, when you had the American League, you know, there were sometimes guys say, well, you know what, I'll put an outstanding defensive guy out there, and I can still have his bat. You know, it's a shame that Mays and Aaron, Cepeda kind of took a little bit of the advantage of the DH as he was a little younger than him. But it's a shame that they didn't put that into both leagues at the same time, and we could have seen a longer Mays, a longer Mickey Mantle. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That thing was implemented in both leagues, as it was. You know, Mickey was in his league, but Mickey had gone then. But for those guys, it just because so often we just wanted to see those guys hit anyway. You know, we were about the few Mays was one of the few guys you wanted to see jump everything. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network the show. Let's go back to I'm looking for some bad interviews. We had Jeff Sheffield was in there. I'm trying to find Seaver for us. And real quickly, we're going to talk about NFL. And what I was surprised, gang, and Lady A, I talked to Dusty, and I'm going to try to catch a hold of what happened to Mel Cassell. And I talked to Sea Wings. Three things about the Jets. They got four guys going to the Pro Bowl, which they're playing today. Number two, Sean Green, Lady A, got 1,000 yards rushing. And listen to this. I couldn't believe. I thought it was a typo. The Jets were the number one offensive team to score 65.5 in the red zone, Lady A. I couldn't believe this. Can you believe that?
I told you that. Remember when we watched that game? I told you about them in the red zone.
But I guess they just didn't get down there often enough then.
Right.
But you know. You got to put a nail on the coffin on the Jet franchise because they're finished. They're not going to go anywhere.
Know so much
wow.
You know what? You know what?
They're
come
not
on. Going like
they got four guys in the Pro Bowl
and not resurrect them anymore. They're finished.
Let me tell you something.
They
hold
got
on,
four guys
on,
in the
on.
Pro Bowl. They had the best scoring team in the red zone. They got 1,000 yards. And you're burying them because they didn't make
that's
the Super Bowl?
Right.
You get really, Lady Rob, up now, you Dusty.
You know,
don't do that now.
15,
I'm starting to think
fame.
Dusty was the one that wrote that headline. I think it was in the Post. It had on the back of the Post, it had Revis, Rickachaw. It said, Hano losers.
Hey, listen. If there was a word misspelled, it was Dusty that did it.
But what I'm telling you is, they're dead. You talk about 15 minutes of fame. They had 3 years to give us something, and all they
did was give us nothing.
Did you bet money on Dusty? Starting with Moby Dick with his big mouth talking all his trash.
I'm going to tell you this, and you know what? And C-Wings and I saw it, I would say probably the last five games of the season and the last few home games of the season, him and I would go in there, and I would tell him all the time, something's going on in this locker room. Something is going on in this locker room. Him and I would say it. And you know what? Wasn't it funny that after that we said that, it came out in the press? I'm telling you, unless they're able to make those changes.
You was a leak, huh?
In the locker room, you're not going to snap out of it.
You was a leak, huh, Lady A?
Snitch.
You was a leak, huh? An informant, huh?
But you know what, Lady A? It was actually worse than what me and you picked up in the locker room.
Exactly.
I would say we picked it up around week number five, it was like after we did, we had our locker room interviews. It's just the mood in the locker room, even when they won.
But you know what it was
always? Sort of rivalry.
If you notice too, see, and just to piggyback on what you're saying, it was always around the area over there where Dustin Keller and Mark Sanchez were at, right? Only in that little area, like you would see the daggers.
Yeah, when you first came in.
Yeah, you would see the daggers.
Yeah, but then when you look at it now, when Revis, when he starts to speak out and say, I think
absolutely.
It was the Daily News, and he's normally he's good, but when he's talking about this problems in the locker room, look out, look out, and Rex needs to coach. He needs to take control of that locker room. Don't worry about whether the guys like you or not. you're there as a leader, as a coach.
Oh, yeah, but see, are we being kind of hard on Rex? I mean, you told us, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports Network, the show. You told us, first of all, how he lost a lot of guys that he didn't have last year, and that was management. Okay, it wasn't because all these guys, like I remember seeing David Johnson the other day, David Johnson, Bill Parcells. Rex has the attitude, these are my guys. He didn't want to get rid of those guys. I think management did that. So
yeah.
he can't be faulted for that. And number two, I mean, have we forgotten that he took us the last 2 years ago one game away? There's no team in the last 3 years that has had two shots at the Super Bowl like we have. I mean, we got to give him some props,
what, Doc?
I give him no credit.
Well,
he did a good job,
Doc.
Sanchez. When I knew Sanchez was going to be a pretty good quarterback. He has an arm. I mean, I was there the first scrimmage he took in preseason. I think they were playing the Carolina Panthers or the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't remember which one. And his first snap of the ball, he threw it for, I think, 45 yards. So he lost some of his weapons. But, I mean, if your house is in order, I don't care what you do. I mean, you can ask D'Antoni that. This guy, I mean, he may not have the locker room problems at this point, but
they're coming. They're coming.
To me personally, I don't think that Carmelo Anthony is that hurt. I just don't think he's that hurt.
Hold on. Stop.
What?
Stop.
What?
Stop. Hoopster.
Yeah.
What happened? You're the best, but are the Knicks giving up on him? And my thing, too, here, Hoopster, D'Antoni is doing the same thing Isaiah Thomas did. I mean, they're still blaming Isaiah Thomas for the hot dog rolls. Is that true?
Yes, it's true.
Have the guys given up on D'Antoni?
You can tell they don't want to play for him. You can tell by their attitude, the way they're on the court. You can tell.
He's
going to be out of there. I think he'll be fired. Don't be surprised he'd be fired very soon. You heard it on the radio from me. Don't
be
surprised
he'd
be fired.
If they continue to spiral, he'll be probably gone before the All-Star break.
Yeah. And plus, Carmelo Anthony's banged up.
Thomas there. He was sitting courtside, maybe about 10 feet from the bench. They're really, I think, setting up to get rid of this guy. I mean, I didn't like the choice of him coming to New York anyway.
If you look at it, the guy's resume said nothing about defense, and defense is the hallmark of a New York team. The guy's resume said nothing about defense. He's all offense. He hadn't won anything, and you know, his resume just didn't say, you know, we got a winner. We got that's going to make a change here. We got a guy that's going to bring us a championship. And he's been given Hoopster. He's been given a lot of rope here, man. He's been given a lot.
Oh, I know
of
he's
rope.
Gonna hang. They're gonna hang him. Don't worry. He's gonna get hung. Don't
it's
worry.
It's not even just that. I mean, full of hype. You guys know now. They've been saying they got one of the greatest front courts they've had in a long time. I mean, you got to perform out there, man. You know what I'm saying? People waited, especially after the strike. People waited, like, you know, for these guys to come out and do what they got to do. And now all the hype and everything, they got to perform.
Yeah,
and also,
with
Seaweed's question, Doc, with Seaweed's question, like, Carmelo Anthony is hurt. His ankle, his wrist, he's all messed up out there. Mm-hmm. You can tell where he was playing out there.
I think
he
gave up.
No, he ain't giving up. He's hurt. He hurt. You hurt. You can't.
Okay,
Seaweed, that's not like him.
Back off. The Hoopster said the brother's hurt. Back off. Okay? Call coach.
You know what?
You know
what
he's playing out there. He ain't giving up. No.
Me and the Hoopster was at the last game when they played Boston. And Amari Stoudemire, I mean, with a broken back almost, the guy was out there hustling.
Yes, he was.
His two thoughts here. His two, and we said this before. Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Silver Channel, Sports Network. The show it is the crew: Sea Wings, Lady A, Dia Zussi. We got to get Mel Cosell and the Hoopster. We're looking for Harold Weston. It is a.
No, I couldn't reach him, Doc. I couldn't reach
okay.
him. His phone
okay, well,
was
I'm trying to get a hold of Mel Cosell. But it's a bat day special as we salute. Very quickly, too, let me break down that whole itinerary of bat day. I had my thing, I got to break it to you. But, you know, this is the. Bat is the baseball assistance team, teamwork caring and sharing, the baseball assistant team. And list real quickly, the baseball assistant team, BAT, was formed in 1986 by a group of former Major League Baseball players. BAT was founded to confidentially help members of the baseball family who were in need of assistance with nowhere else to turn. In 1991, a one-time contribution was jointly made by Major League Baseball, the Major League Baseball Players Association, and the Garnet-affiliated Freedom Foundation to establish an endowment for a bat. The charitable organization was not intended to take the place of a pension or to serve as one. The intention was to serve as a bridge to help people get back on their feet. The organization has changed slightly since 1986, but one thing has not changed. If a member of the baseball family is in need of medical, financial, or psychological assistance, BAT will do all they can. BAT raises money through a variety of sources. The primary funding events are the Major League Baseball Players Deduction Program and the annual Going to BAT for BAT fundraising dinner held right here in New York City. BAT also raises money through local golf tournaments and memorial auctions. Hall of Famer Bob Gibson, four-time World Series champion David Cohen, and many others have hosted such events. Since 1986, BAT has awarded more than 2,800 grants and over $25 million to help Pride and Dignity, the members of the baseball family. We're going to read some more about BAT in just a minute, but let's talk and listen to the man who has the highest percentile of any player voted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. He is one of only five pitchers to strike out 2,000 batters in his first 5 years, and he did it the fastest. He's the only pitcher to strike out 200 batters 5 years in a row. He's in the top five in the all-time list of strikeouts. Wins. When Tom Seaver retired from baseball, he was in the top five in wins, ERA, and he has an ERA at two-something in strikeouts. And I remember talking to Cito Gaston, and I asked Cito Gaston, how good was Tom Seaver? And Mr. Gaston stopped, leaned against the wall, and said, Tom, terrific. He said, I'll tell you this. If Tom Seaver had a one-run lead against you in the seventh inning, in the eighth and ninth innings, his fastball got faster. Not Tom Seaver's his first name. Not Tom. It's George Thomas Seaver, named after his grandfather. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Seaver.
You know, if you make it to 40 years old, that you're very fortunate. And spontaneously, I said, I'm going to go back to California and race race. And because it was so spontaneous, I never forgot that I said it. And it was always there. And I make the kind of money that is being paid to the players today. And I can just hang around and broadcast and said, oh, what am I going to do? I've got great partners and all that stuff. They've got great luck for the game. To travel out for a while, that's okay. I always had this other dream, second dream. Of course, in Major League Baseball, this is another dream, and that's come true, too. So I'm in the Napa Valley, Diamond Mountain, and you've got 3.5 acres of grapes, and producing Cabernet wine, and it is spectacularly just delicious, yeah. So I'm doing the same thing I did the first time in Napa, with another go around that. No airplanes, hotels, etc. I had plenty enough for two lifetimes, etc. My commute now to work is 90 seconds on foot with three Labrador retrievers. And the puppy who's just a couple years old, his name is Bricks. Now, does anybody know what Bricks are? Another one is Bambi and Major League, but another chocolate and another black. Anybody know what Bricks are?
Well, Bricks.
Come on.
Coffee.
Bricks of,
Bricks.
Bricks.
What kind of bricks?
Bricks.
Like in building a house?
In the wine industry. What's
the wine
industry?
In the wine industry.
We were kind of segue to that.
Story, you know.
I'm not going to tell you guys.
Well,
you
know,
from the grapes in order to
but it was, I had somebody ask me, and not, you know, rather snidely, as a matter of fact, so what do you know about raising grades? And I said, not a couple thick of things. What did I know in 1967 about getting to Cooperstown, New York in 1992? I wasn't, I'm not afraid of it. It's something brand new that has been there, and it's been a wonderful learning curve. And it is so pleasing, it is so settling, so comforting to be able to do just whatever it is that you want to do. And I adore it.
I'm
on
your wife being sold in stores and
now
there
you go. And
thank you, baby.
Thank you. No, no, website, Seaver. SeaverVineyards.com.
Aside from GCS, are they going to be good friends of
Kevin? I'm going to finish what I'm selling here.
Franchise.
everybody, including Honor, Tommy, and Brody, and the rest of us, et cetera. And we, not New Yorkers, and didn't buy this stuff. This lovable losers and all this other crap. This is glowing. That's for you guys in the press. Motivation on top of everything else of what you want to do with your professional career and what you want to do with your teammates to achieve something. And we believed it. I mean, in 69, you never believe you're going to go to the World Series or think you're going to win. Jerry, because we haven't done it before. And Brody was the first one to come out and say, we can win this thing. Why? Why did he say that? Right. Who was catching that pitching staff and seeing what he was getting every day? Kuzman, Seaver, Gentry, Maya, boom, 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 boom. And as soon as that gelled, and as soon as we understood it, we began one by one jumping on that boat, on that bandwagon, and believing that we could win. We knew it before anybody else
did.
My goal was to get 7 years or whatever it is to be able to qualify for the pension.
Wow.
I made $7,000 my first year.
Right.
Not for pitch, for the year.
And what was the pension after 7 years when you got to that? Would be $30,000
per life? I don't know what it was, but it's certainly different. Yeah. It's much different. I mean, first you're glad, you're in disbelief when you get to the big leagues, but you validate yourself. And then you go through the process of refining your art. This goes from pitching to an art form, physical and mental art form. I'll carry it forward. I was warming up in the bullpen in Chicago. It's one of the best compliments I ever had in my life. And Dave Duncan, still working for Tony, says, I'm done. I've got 2 minutes on the clock before I have to go and change my shirt. He said, Tom, you don't have squat tonight. He didn't use this word squat, but it sounded like that. You don't have squat. And he said it blank, but I had a towel. And I looked at him straight in the face. I was, 39 years old or whatever it was. And I said, what's the problem? I don't see a problem here. I'll figure it out. Now we're back to the Saturday New York Times crossword puzzle, and I'll make it work. It's okay. I know I'm not going to pitch you to a shutout, but I'm going to play the cards so I don't give up 5 runs in an inning. I make it. That was the beauty of pitching. And sometimes you can't figure the puzzle out, or sometimes you can't. You don't have it. You don't have it. I mean, that's what happens. You don't have enough physically, or you make one wrong mistake, or make one mistake, or whatever. It's horrible, whatever it is. You're not a pitching coach. I'll talk about that. You don't have to do that.
One last point.
The great George Thomas Seaver. Duncan told me one time when we talked about great pitchers, and he said, even though he hadn't seen a lot of Seaver, because Seaver was at the end when he won his 300th game with the Chicago White Sox, and he said, it must have been really a joy to see him in his youth. And it just says a lot about Seaver. Your pitching coach says you don't have anything. Seaver said, well, what's the problem here? I'll figure it out. Don't worry about this. Everybody that I know, and I remember reading I've heard this line so much, everybody out of respect. And Dusty Baker, and I remember it was first a Roadrunner, Ralph, come to me in a minute. It was Dusty Baker and Cito Gaston and Ralph Garr, the Roadrunner. And he was the first one to allude me to how great Seaver was. He said, "What's wrong with my man Tom over there?" I see it was like 8-3, something like that. And then Dusty and Cito Gaston. I mean, Dusty said Seaver threw him a pitch. He hit a home run on it. He said when he came back up again, Seaver threw him the same pitch again. In fact, Seaver told me, we were talking one day. He said, "Man," he said, "I messed up Dusty's mind. He hit a home run off me, and I threw him the same pitch the next time up." And Dusty said, "My mind was messed up for a week." Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blaze Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Depth the show. We're going to take a quick break and come back. But the consensus is, I got 3 right-hand pitchers, Satchel Paige, Tom Seaver, and Marichal are my guys. Tom Seaver, I used to think Tom Seaver was a great pitcher, and as I listen to guys and I look at his numbers, Tom Seaver was the greatest right-hand pitcher of his generation, and he has the highest percentile by anybody. 90, in fact, who couldn't have voted for him? Who could have voted for Mazer going 100%? But Seaver has the highest percentile ever of a first ballot player vote to the Hall of Fame, 98%, followed by his good buddy, Nolan Ryan. Gentlemen and sweet ladies, don't nobody move.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network.
Oh, my God.
Broadcasting,
are you kidding me?
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, BlakeRadio.com.
Dr. Stanley, Sports and Depth for the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports and Depth, the show 1947. Jackie Robinson, Intermediate League Baseball, April 15, 1947, at Ebbets Field. The year before, he signed a contract with the Montreal team up in Canada. And they just really love Jackie. I mean, there's a great line that they had when they won the championship. The fans were so in love and enamored with Jackie that they started chasing Jackie. It was said it was the first time ever a white crowd was chasing a black man with love and affection. And, you know, as you know, Jackie became the first ever Rookie of the Year. When he won in 1947, that was the first year the award was implemented. He won that. First African-American baseball player to win that, the MVP and the batting championship. Willie Mays was the second. And we've got to listen to some Willie in a minute, too. Willie came up in 51, won the Rookie of the Year, and then in his second full year in baseball, 1954, Mays won the MVP and the batting championship. And in his third year, Willie Mays won the home run championship, becoming the youngest man ever in history of baseball and during the 20th century, they had 50 more home runs in 1 year. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake with the Network Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Depth for the show. Okay, good. We got a good 45 minutes left. We'll probably do with the mic on, lights off. Getting to a little boxing here. Lady A, is the Mayweather-Pacquiao thing coming off Cinco de Mayo or what? Or just another vicious rumor? Or as Linwood Master Simon would say, lies! And Deja Catamacho. Are we going to have it? I'm hearing Ortiz and Berto is done the 17th of March. We're going to have the guy considered the best middleweight in the world fighting in Madison Square Garden. But are we going to see? What's the rumors? What's the inside scoop? Is Pacquiao going to step forward, tell Bob Arum, let me do this thing? Let's do Mayweather before he gets locked up or before I get knocked out. What's happening, Lady A? Talk to me.
The way it sounds to me is it still seems like it's up in the air. I haven't heard anything recently. I mean, I don't know if Dusty has either, but I haven't heard anything as positive in the light. Basically, the way it looks is if like Mayweather may not fight Pacquiao, and he may end up fighting Cotto or... from what I was hearing, it may be Pacquiao Bradley, from what I'm hearing, maybe coming up next. Is that what you're hearing, Dusty?
No. Well, I think I said it two Sundays ago that I went there with one from column A and one from column B of four choices for Pacquiao.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, really.
Yeah.
And like, Lamont
Peterson,
who beat Khan.
Mm-hmm.
He had Timothy Bradley.
Miguel Cotto.
Miguel Cotto. Who was the fourth guy?
Pacquiao again.
Marquez, you're right. And Marquez. There were four guys. Jeez, I'm trying to remember. Peterson, Bradley.
Cotto
and Marquez, right?
Marquez.
But now the rumors are that Cotto supposedly preferred a rematch with Pacquiao. Now they're floating that around because, you know, Lady A, we were at the post-fight press conference, mm-hmm. and he said he wanted to get even with the guys who beat him. Who else beat him was Pacquiao. So they inferred that he was leading towards Pacquiao. Miguel Cotto and El Vocero came up and said, there's no such thing. I never discussed anything with Pacquiao. I'm still a free agent. Bob Arum has not reached. I have not signed with anybody. You know, I will fight with anybody that I want to fight. You know, so there's no truth to the fact that I'm going back with Pacquiao.
However, the battle for supremacy for Mexico is one of the things that's brewing right now, because Canelo Alvarez and Cesar Chavez's son, okay,
you need to.
Right? They may be fighting soon. However, the discrepancy is coming in the weights. They don't know if they're going to fight at the catch weight. That's what the Ring magazine was saying. They don't know if they're going to fight at the catch weight.
Well, the problem here is this. This has become such a beautiful soap opera, and we can speculate from Christmas.
Hey, not a soap opera, a novella. Okay, keep it in the Latin
novella.
Thing, a novella.
Okay, novella Telemundo.
Okay, okay.
But the thing
get
is
that right.
Cesar Chavez, and this is the inferences now. You get out, hold on to your hats. The inference is Julio Cesar Chavez is afraid of Martinez. That's why he signed to fight Rubio.
Mm-hmm.
And Martinez was pissed off because he wanted to fight Chavez, and he said he's afraid of fighting, so he's fighting these Tank Town guys. And Rubio's not a Tank Town. But Jose Suleiman, to keep everything down, called Martinez and said, look, do me a favor, step aside, let these guys fight. And whoever wins, you got the winner.
Okay,
why?
Dusty, did Jose tell you this, or Consuela, or Rodrigo down at the bodega over the number slot? Who told you this? Did Jose tell you?
No,
but you know what, Doc, not for nothing. Wait, if I could just interject for one second.
Yeah.
One of the big things that I think is causing a little bit of discrepancy with it has to do with the fact that with the weights with Chavez and Alvarez, there's a discrepancy to weight because
course,
they feel that he can hydrate. He can hydrate as high as 180. If he hydrates up to 180, even if they fight at the catch weight, they want to make it so that Alvarez is not so off in weight. So
that's why there's a problem
with the fight in and of itself being
No, fine. Where's Harold West?
Dusty,
I mean, how sickening is this, man? I mean, you used to weigh in on the day of the fight. If you didn't weigh 147, I mean, let's talk to Juan Marichal for a minute, okay?
Who?
Juan Marichal. You ever heard of him?
No, I never heard of him. We're talking boxing, man.
Sports Network on the Blake Ritter, Herbert Rainbow, so the channel Sports Network. I remember one time Muhammad Ali said, if I didn't introduce this man, the good Lord wouldn't forgive me so much. He'll forgive me, but if I didn't talk to you, my favorite, the greatest, the Dominican. Where did the nickname Dominican Danny come from? That was a writer's Andy in San Francisco.
Really?
Even that nickname. Yeah, the Dominican Danny. And if people like it, before the season was over, my manager came up to me and said, why do you pitch like that? So the question really surprised me. So I told him, I said, that's how I learned. So he said, do you want to learn how to throw overhands? I said, what would be the benefit if I learned? He said, you would be much effective against left-handed hitters. When he said that right away, I said, yes, I want to learn. So he took me to a bullpen. Baseball and catcher. I started to try. I never did it before. I started to try, and it seemed to me impossible to do it without kicking my leg.
Really?
and that day, the high leg kick
came about.
Started.
No, who's the medicine?
Andy Gilbert. Yes.
Now, why number 27? Was that always your favorite number?
No, I was in AAA in 1960. They called me up on July 10th to the Giants. So,
back 4 years in a row, Tony Gwynn, 6 out of 7 years. Your first game, man, one hitter, wasn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, Philadelphia. Only Darren Bo hit there. Yeah, the only hit.
And you finally no hit Houston Astros, correct? Right?
Yes. June 15, 1963.
I know today. Somebody said it was amazing that you could pitch in Candlestick Park. It really amazed me to play Candlestick Park.
Let me tell you, my career was so good because I was playing in front of Willie Mays. Willie Mays center field was so easy for me to go to the hitters with him. He know the opposite hitter so well. So every time he say about the opposite hitter, he helped me because I tried to pitch the way he
was going me to pitch. Yeah, but you know what? It was strange because I remember when he got older, he took his days off when he was pitching because he said, I knew Juan was going to win. I had to play. So something happened here now.
Well, we need him strong. So that's why sometimes we give it an off day.
Yeah. You're looking at the game today, you know. Pitching like you were going. You were the greatest pitcher in 243 wins, 244 complete games. That's never going to happen again. And now today, guys just don't pitch count. I mean, it's changed. Guys are not as fundamentally as good today as they were in your time.
Well, you remember that game I pitched. Ron Spano myself.
He did it. He did it.
227 pitches.
1-0. You beat
him. No, that was in San Francisco.
Okay.
San Francisco. Yes.
Can I tell you what it means to me to talk to the great Juan Marichal? I love Marichal. People forget that he was in the 62 World Series, which could have been a big, big difference in the Giants beating the Yankees. Had the little incident, got the suspension, hurt us again in the stretch in 1965. The Seaver, Marichal, Satchel Paige. That's my guys. That's my guys.
You forgot your boy Durant. That's your boy too, Durant.
Lady A, you're going to find yourself with Dusty. We're talking baseball, not boxing. Don't make it. No, I'm going to tell you something.
So when you're doing it like pancake batter, you're mixing everything up. I didn't even finish with the Pacquiao thing, and you jump into Marichal.
Dusty, I mean, Marichal's in the Hall of Fame, number one.
I couldn't
you know
guess
what I mean.
Where he is. We're talking boxing.
Well, you know, me and you are boxing right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
you did that slide move and you sick Lady A on me with the Duran move because he's Panamanian. If he's Puerto Rican, you wouldn't be talking about him like that. I know the deal. Go ahead, Dusty. I know the deal. And Melko Sellers here. So hey, we're gonna top rope you a little bit too, baby. Finish up, Dusty. I'm ready to slam you, baby. Go ahead.
That's okay, man, but you leave things hanging unfinished and then you jump into another subject matter.
Listen, I mean, you know, when you go down to the bodega and you have your coffee.
No, don't give
you know
that bodega
mean?
Nonsense, man. This is okay. I don't sit there with a bodega, have a few presidentes and talk crash. You know, this is all research.
Just talking about before. That you were talking about guys hydrating 20, 30, 40 pounds, whatever it is. Like I said before, I believe that that's one of the main issues as to why this fight is not coming to pass so as soon as they want it to because of
which
the fact
that... Which one you talking about,
ADA? The Chavez-Alvarez fight.
Oh, Canelo, yeah.
I mean, because they're saying he may hydrate as high as 180, and this guy's like, you're talking about a fight that's going to come up.
You know what? This is the thing here.
You're talking about a catchweight at 154.
Well, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't. What you and Dusty are telling me, Doc Stanley, Sports Jeff with the Blake Reader Network, Rainbow Soul Chair, Sports Jeff, we're going to move. You know, it just doesn't make sense because, you know, it's perpetrating a fraud here. Because, it's, you know, why do I have to make the weight on Friday and I not have to be that weight when I fight the next night? I did a show in Brazil. Guy had me on, and he talked about MMA. And he talked about the decline of boxing. And I said, you're right. It's dying. You know, MMA, people like the mixed martial arts. You get the top fighters fight. I mean, we're still talking about Pacquiao and Ray Leonard. Never forget it. The night that Julio Cesar Chavez, the real Chavez, lost to Frankie Randall for the first time. Ray said something in the dressing room. He said, there comes a time that it ain't about the money. It's about being the champ. Well, you know, this thing with Pacquiao, man, this just has long been done, man.
What you don't understand, Doc, is the fact is the mealy-mouthed, BSing commissions who changed from my day. My day, I had to go at the day of the fight and make weight, for God's sake.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
Okay? If I hydrated maybe 1 or 2 pounds that night, so what? But these guys weigh in the day before the fight. What did Margarito say when he fought Pacquiao? I make the weight. By the time I fight him, I'll be 17 pounds bigger than him.
Yep.
And this is what happens. Andre Berto defending his welterweight title at 147 pounds. He makes 147 pounds. The day he fought Ortiz, they both weighed 160 pounds.
Yep.
Ridiculous. And I wish if they do fight Pacquiao and Mayweather, they will have a 15-rounder, and they will weigh the day of the fight. So stop.
Nah, you know what I think that fight should be?
That's
I know
the
how,
problem.
You know, wait,
here.
Hold up, Dusty. You know
the
how they should do that fight?
The letting these guys hydrate to heavyweight.
Yeah, but Dusty, it's sad.
That
it's sad
fight,
and touching. As Harold says, it's not going to happen.
But
I
wait,
mean,
hold
it's
on.
Gonna be,
that's
it's going
to
be.
For that fight, for that fight, for the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, I say, and I know it'll never happen, because they made us wait so long, it should be last man standing.
All of a sudden, you know what? On that line, back off, Mel Cosell. Now I can see this happening. Dusty, Lady A, and now Cosell is in this last. What is this? You know, what? Not, no, we want to put up a steel cage too, Lady A. Last man standing,
yep.
No gloves.
Yup. No, I'm not
saying
no
gloves.
Last man standing.
Remember.
Hold on. Last man standing. 2 minute rounds. Last man standing.
Lady A.
Too much wine.
You know, what kind of wine are you dipping in? I mean, I'm going to give you the number. Okay, here's the card now. Okay, you ready?
Ready? She's dipping in the same wine as the
vineyard.com. All right?
The nonsense they've been putting the fans through, that for the nonsense they're putting the fans through and having us waiting, they should give us that much. That's what I say.
Right.
And the reason why, if I may, ladies and gentlemen, Mel Cosell. Take the floor, Mel.
Thank you, Doctor. If I may, I actually asked Harold Weston this very same question some weeks ago on this very show, Doc, about the possibility of, say, a winner-take-all type of situation. He said, which I basically knew but got a confirmation, that it would never happen. The closest we will get to Lady A's idea of a last man standing or winner take all is a possibility where the winner gets the lion's share of the purse and the loser doesn't. That's the closest we'll ever see to that.
Let me piggyback the fight will never take place is because Pacquiao told Mayweather, let's do parity. I got my promoter. He's going to pay me what I want. Let your promoter pay you what you want, but it has to be parity. Mayweather says, you're the punk. F you. I'm not going to give you parity because I'm the champ and I'm undefeated. That's the fight. You know, for the very beginning, folks, it was a 40 mil each. Mayweather wanted 60 mil after he beat Shane Mosley. And there's $100 million being thrown around for each. And Pacquiao says, okay, we'll do parity. Mayweather says, no good. I'm the champ. You take what I give you. So we'll never have it. That's why I'm not even worried about that.
Yeah, but half of it is Bob Arum, too, because when Doc and I went to the Ortiz-Mayweather press conference, Mayweather was saying, a lot of it is Bob Arum. A lot of it has to do with Bob
Arum. He doesn't
Arum.
Want the fight.
All
he
of it is. Not a lot of it. I got the floor.
All of it.
All of this is Bob Arum. Do you think?
He doesn't want the fight.
Dusty, you said it. I mean, do you think if Mayweather or Pacquiao was a Don King fighter, the fight, we would be in the trilogy by now. And
exactly.
If King hadn't made the fight, we'd been dogging King. And I said, if Margarito was a Don King fighter, him and King would be banned from. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to take a break. I got some Willie Mays. I got to play a little Willie Mays. I got to go back to the month here. Dusty wants to happy birthday to you again because your birthday is on the 24th. So happy birthday to you again.
Don't forget that.
Hey, flip it around. make it 67. What the heck? Dusty, happy birthday to you, 31st. Jackie Robinson, my good man, Glenn Martin, wants his happy birthday to Don Thomas, the legendary entertainment editor over at the New York Beacon. The month started off with birthday wishes to Mrs. Marion Borkin, who is the wife of the man with the greatest boxing show in the history of television, Borkin on Boxing, Marion B. Borkin, black, bodacious, brilliant, and brother, Mark Raspberry, boxing editor, sports editor at the Beacon. My daughter, Turquoise, on the 2nd, the 15th. Dr. King, service to, life's most assistant, most urgent question is, what are you doing? Well, Dr. King, the next day was none other than Roy Jones Jr. The 17th, Buddy McGirt, and the man who said this, service to others is eventually paid for your space on earth. And here's a better one that he said the other day, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali said, if a man at 50 still thinks the way he did at 20, he's lost 30 years. Wow. Wow. The 19th, Anthony Newham, 21st, my lovely mother, Vivian Dusty, on the 24th, and the 31st, the man who broke the baseball color line, first four-letter man in the history of UCLA, second lieutenant in the military, Jack Roosevelt Robinson. And now, the man who wore his number backwards, and the man considered to be the greatest, well, he is the greatest to ever play. Hope he gets some pretty good game. We're going to hang with this, and we'll go. The one and only, the first African-American man to do 30-30, the only home run hitter in the history of baseball to lead the league in stolen bases, and he did that 3 years in a row, led the league in triples. Greatest catch, greatest center field, the greatest play ever. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Willie Howard Mays.
Stanley Sports is up on the Blake Hitter Network, Rainbow Show, Stanley Sports is up, so it's the Bat Center, and I'm out here in the corner listening to my man Rafael Santana.
Can you hear that?
No.
No, you can't hear that good? Okay. Then I'm going to stop it there then. I was trying to get Willie Mays. Well, Willie was funny. As Willie said when he first came to New York, his father told him, get to New York, if they slap you on the one cheek, turn the other cheek, because if you don't, they'll shoot you. And everybody thought it was pretty funny. Willie Mays, okay. I was trying to see how that good, that came through pretty good. Dr. Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports in Depth is the show. And we'll wind it down a little bit. We'll probably no doubt do with the mic on, lights off. Bat Day dinner. Mackie Sasser was there. Eddie Cranepool was there. Tom, Georgetown receiver, Juan Marichal. Rafael Santana said something, too, that you were talking about earlier, Lady A, and the different mindset that the Yankees have as opposed to the Mets. And I asked Rafael Santana, you know, you're a guy who was on both sides of the ledger, National League, American League, as Darryl Strawberry and Doc Gooden. I said, you know, how was it playing in New York? And he said, you know, great team, Yankees. Said, but you always felt that there was a microphone around. You always felt there was some sort of somebody always trying to not, you know, you just weren't comfortable. You just knew that maybe there was a big brother mentality. He said, National League Mets, it was a whole different locker room. You know, you didn't have to worry about that. You just felt a lot more comfortable. And I thought that was quite interesting. You know, that he had made that particular statement. You know, Willie Montanez talked about, you know, how the game has changed. Lando Cepeda, as we were with him when they had the Platinum Hall of Fame inducted into a segment of Yankee Stadium, and I asked him, how did he get the name Cha-Cha? And he said Johnny Antonelli gave him the name, and Baby Bull was a nickname given to him by Life magazine. Orlando Cepeda was the first man ever to win the Rookie of the Year unanimously, and the first man to win the MVP award unanimously. And that's the, in fact, I don't think anybody else has ever won it unanimously as he has won it. Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, Doc Kelly, Sports Network, the Blake Ritter Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Network, the show. Super Bowl. It's a repeat of a couple of years ago. We lost Lady A. We're going to start with Mel Cosell. And no, but no, we're going to start with our football guy. You know, Sea Wings sort of Raven game last week, and I've said this, I'm tired of this. I don't see how the officials blew that call. It seemed to me like that was a touchdown. And right now, I think people are starting to, once again, for the back ones, thanks to Steve Roach for all he did for us media-wise and his great staff there. It was just very pleasantly done, and just want to thank him and everybody. And we're going to talk some more about BAT. I told you it was. Let's go back to a little more explaining what BAT is. BAT is the Baseball Assistance Team. Some information on BAT. The Baseball Assistance Team provides a means of support to qualified applicants through charitable contributions from corporations, foundations, and individuals. BAT provides members of the baseball family in need of medical, financial, or psychological assistance. The baseball family includes former major league players, coaches, and managers, qualifying minor league players, umpire scouts, little league players, athletic trainers, major league and minor league front office personnel, women from professional baseball player league, and the widows and children of all eligible players. BAT learns of potential recipients through many sources, including individuals asking for help, players, managers, scouts, umpires, writers, and broadcasters alike help identify people in need. Even fans have informed BAT of those needing assistance. The BAT grant committee reviews each case by evaluating the merit and thoroughly exploring all avenues of available assistance. The BAT grant committee reviews each case by evaluating the merit and thoroughly exploring all avenues of available assistance prior to making a decision. All names and decisions remain confidential unless an individual comes forward to share their story to assist BAT in spreading the mission of BAT or to help raise money. BAT recognizes that lives of our baseball heroes and those who work behind the scenes sometimes see a bad bounce. For some, particularly those who played before the days of the escalating salaries and the generous pension plans, events and circumstances can become difficult and trying, sometimes through no fault of their own. It is then when BAT steps up to the plate. And they have a couple of testimonies, one from a former Negro League player. I don't know what would have happened to me if it wasn't for your help. I feel I'm living on borrowed time and sincerely hope. And borrowed time and sincerely hope help can continue because there is no way I can make it without it. It's from the spouse of a former player. Thank you for all the help you've given me and my six kids after the untimely passing of my husband. He would have been so proud that the baseball family was there to help us through such difficult times. Now, here's another one from a front office employee. You have taken the time to listen and have reached out to make a difference in my life, and for that I am eternally grateful. You make a world of difference. Here's from a scout. We sincerely appreciate all that you did to help us during my heart surgery. You made a very trying time in our life manageable. Thank you. Seems so inadequate, but we mean it from the bottom of our hearts. And here's one from a former player. I had 3 World Series rings, but I had to sell 2 of them. I was not doing well. Thanks to Bat, I was able to get back on solid footing and keep my last ring that I can now pass on to my family. Wow. From a minor leaguer, after almost 6 years in a wheelchair, I was able to walk again thanks to Bat. My family and I have no words to thank Bat. Even though I was a career minor league player, I was treated with respect and equally as if I were a major league player, which brings to me that great line of Dr. Martin Luther King. Life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And Bat seems to be doing that. Service to others is to make you pay for your space on earth. 2 days later, that's the birthday of Muhammad Ali. And, you know, when you hear these kind of things, I remember when I first used to go to these affairs and I met the great Robin Roberts there and Joe Gagliola. And, you know, you just got to take your hat off to this type of organization and what they're doing. Gang, C-Wings, I wanted to kick with
you. Doc, can I ask you a question? Who was the guy with the 3 rings and he had a cell too?
No, I, you know, it doesn't say. It just gives you the quote. It doesn't say. You know.
Wow, that's sad, though.
Hey, Dusty, pull out your Ouija board and tell us next week. I know you'll have it for us, baby. I know you have it for us.
Tell you about next week?
No. When you go down to Consuela and Jose in the group, pull out the Ouija board, take the quote, and I know you'll have the answer for us next week. You know what I mean?
Don't be funny.
I'm not being funny. Hey, Dusty, we need a name, baby. Gang, C-Wings with you, Super Bowl next week. I told you this, Dusty, told you this also, Mel Cassell. I didn't see C-Wings. I told you, I didn't see all this superiority, and New England did not impress me by beating up on the Denver Broncos 45-10. Brady threw 2 INTs, didn't throw a touchdown, and if the referees don't blow that call in the end zone, and the kicker, they should just throw the uniform off his back, cut his legs off. But I thought that was a touchdown. I didn't see. They should have told you. You don't cut his legs off. I told you, C-Wings, I didn't see. You said they're the old Patriots, they're healing on all. And I agree with you. I mean, Larry said they're getting better as you know, as the season goes. The Belichick, great coach, maybe the best. You know what I mean? But the point is, I didn't see a win over the over the Denver Broncos as the platform, as the gauge, as the moniker that was going to tell us that New England was the great team they were back in the Randy Moss days. And if that, I think the ref blew the call. I like the Giants. I think the Giants are the best team on both sides of the football right now. But what I'm saying, C-Wings, and you're the guru, you're the genius, I couldn't base off of a win over Tebow and the Denver Broncos that the Patriots were back and they were L-U-C-K-Y to be in the Super Bowl.
You did say that, Doc. No question. This is the most well-balanced team that the Patriots would have played all year. The Giants have come together
like
you
said, both sides of the ball. C-Wings told us the week before how awesome the Patriots look. They were clicking on all cylinders.
Oh, yeah. When you pick out a little kid and you're a bully, you look awesome. That's exactly what it was.
No, I mean, you look at Denver Broncos. They have a good defense. They have a good defense.
Yes, they do.
The offense is not that bad. I mean, just seeing them play the Jets, and the Jets' defense is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that the New England Patriots were very impressive against the Denver Broncos, which is a tough defense. It's a tough environment to play in. The air is thin out there. I mean, even when the Pittsburgh Steelers went to go play him, they wouldn't let one of the players play due to the altitude.
Yeah, Ryan Clark.
Ryan Clark. He couldn't play. I mean, mm-hmm. I still think for them, you look at the wins that they had throughout the season, a lot of the teams in the second half of the season, they were coming from behind New England Patriots.
Yeah.
I mean, even Buffalo was beating them, I think it was like 17-0 at one time, and they came back and won.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been playing impressive. But on the flip side of it, when they played Baltimore, Tom Brady, he looked a little scared. I mean,
yes, he did. He didn't look good at all.
He played the Giants in 07. When you take a pocket quarterback like Brady, that's his Achilles heel. Once you get him out of the pocket, he's not a very mobile quarterback. He's nowhere near.
Did you get a report somewhere that he's fighting, my God, he's playing with an injured throwing hand? There's a rumor that he's nullifying his injury to his right, and he's not that accurate as he was before. That's why he threw those interceptions, and he seems to be unbalanced, or rather he lost his confidence in who the Tom Brady is that we've been seeing for years. But there's an injury that a factor, and that he's playing within himself. I think I jokingly said last week that when the Giants beat the 49ers and they just about squeaked by the Ravens, Tom Brady says, oh, crap, I got to fight these guys again who killed me in 2007. I'd rather fight the 49ers because maybe he considers them easier. And the measure of their superiority to me was not Tim Tebow. The measure of their stay in the game was the battle with the Ravens. But the Giants, unfortunately, or fortunately, because I like to see another ticker tape down in New York, I mean, seem to be in their zone. Now, there's another soundbite that I picked up the other day that only 7 of the original Patriots from that other Super Bowl are still here. They got these new guys, Gronkowski and Hernandez and all them guys, but they don't have that formidable offense and
Randy
defense
Moss
that they had before. And the Giants are still almost to the man originals, and they're getting better. So I don't
they
know
have
if that's
11
the
players returning.
Yeah,
the New York Giants. But the thing is, and me and Doc talked about this. Even with Sanchez, when they played the Baltimore Ravens,
right,
they had a tough defense. And you take a quarterback like Brady. I mean, even Sanchez, he wasn't used to getting hit like that.
Exactly.
Once that I think they kept in 07, they kept Tom Brady. They kept the pressure on him. Once you get him out of the pocket, he's done.
He's not
Rainbow Soul Sports Network shows you on that. Go ahead, Steve. It's an amazing thing that you said that. But then you're an amazing human being anyway. The simplicity of what you said is so intricate and so profound. And yet, you know, I think you're the first person to ever say that. That I could think of.
That he's done when he comes out, yeah.
Yeah, when he comes out the pocket, he's just a whole different quarterback.
I haven't heard that until C-Wing just said
yeah. I still said, you can continue to expound on that. I still said, you know, these games against top-flight teams have once again showed two things: how much they miss Moss, and what an ordinary quarterback Tom Brady is without Moss. I mean, he had that big quarterback game, but he hasn't had a lot of 2-touchdown games. You just brought a fact that so many games he had to come back and win after being behind. So, you know, they've missed Moss. They're here in the Super Bowl, but unquestionably not the same team they were when they came in on the field, no question about it. But this from all sides of the ball. One thing that Mercury Morris always talked about, the Dolphins, the year they won defeated, he said, you know, we were number one across the board, offensively, defensively, special teams. We were the number one football team in football. See, we continue, and Mel Cassell again. Go ahead.
What I think that compared to 07 to now, I think what worked against the Patriots then was that 16-0, the same way that everyone was looking at Green Bay this year. Maybe they were, you know, looking forward to going undefeated. I don't think that record for the 72 Dolphins in this league, the way it is today, I don't
Whatever.
Think that's going to be broken for probably in our lifetimes. I mean, it's just a tough league.
Wow.
A tough league to play in. It's hard to repeat. The way the league is now is going towards more of a throwing game as opposed to the running game. And you look at Manning, I mean, the guy just fights. He fights and fights.
Yeah, he's a fighter.
He gets hit, he jumps back up. Absolutely. But when you see Tom Brady, like they did in 2007, when they put the kibosh on him, I mean, you're getting hit by guys that are 325 pounds running a 440. These guys, that's like being hit by a car with a bunch of cement blocks on the front of the bumper. So, I mean, no one, he's not used to getting hit like that, and he doesn't have the weapons. Gronkowski, I mean, he's dangerous, but he's nursing that ankle injury. He hasn't even...
And not only that, but it's a high ankle sprain.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means that his mobility is really limited.
Right. And
but
he,
like
he
Justin Tuck
up.
Said, to beat the serpent, you have to take his head off. And they're going after Brady. I mean,
exactly.
You look at the Giants were upwards. They were number one in sacks. What was it, 34, 35 sacks in the season?
Something like that, yeah.
And now everyone's healthy. They're dangerous.
Yeah.
They're dangerous
right.
on both sides
they're
of
dangerous.
Football.
Yeah.
It's that,
see,
that's what the key is going to be. When they played the 49ers, it was a defensive game. Now it's the Super Bowl, and everyone is more or less healthy on the Giants. The New England Patriots, they're in there, but they don't have that Gronkowski who, you know, they heavily relied on because they just don't have the team that they had back then.
And
they don't have Moss.
Steven, what do you think about the commentary that the receiver who hit the ball on the punt return and flumbled, and then he himself fumbled again where the guys were able to win by the field goal. Hit the field goal, that they went after him. They called this a cheap shot. This is what I want to get the feel of you guys. They were calling it a cheap shot because they knew this kid had suffered four concussions during the season. And they worked on, his mind was not together, and they wanted to hit him and, you know, befuddle him, and they succeeded. Now they segued into the fact that now that they know Gronkowski, who's 6'6", 265, has a high ankle sprain, and he hasn't practiced all week, they're going to concentrate on his freaking leg.
They're bullies, Dusty, like you was when in third grade. They're bullies. They're bullies, Dusty.
That's right. Oh man, I beat the teacher too, man. So don't give me that crap.
but
and
I don't
think
that,
it's
going to be a
on that football
Super
field. You should have the ability to protect yourself, man. I mean,
yeah.
If you're so hurt to the point that you cannot basically defend yourself when you step out on the field, then
you're
100%
right. And you know what, Mel? And you got to wonder how serious is the coach about winning? You got to put your best players out there. And the thing about I just thought about that. The great Vince Lombardi, he would keep running the ball through the right side. If that was your weak side, he'd keep running the ball there until you made the adjustment. And ironically, Lombardi and the late great Lombardi, and also the great coach from Tom Landry, you know, they were the offensive defensive coaches back in the Giants. It was thought that one of them would be the no coach after Owens left, but it turned out that Ali Sherman got the job. Doc Stanley Sports and Depth, of course, gang, what we're going to have to do is, I know the way it's going, we're going to do the 2 hours with the mic on, and then we'll do with the mic on and lights off. We got hoops to hear. And so we want to talk some more basketball. We want to talk some more about the Super Bowl. And I'm trying to find a my man, Eddie Cranepool. He was one on that Met team. And it was amazing what Siva talked about, how they won buying into that lucky loser thing. Hoops, I want to get to you now. You big Steelers fan. You know, were you kind of rooting for the Ravens? I mean, they beat the Steelers both games, the home and away game this year.
Mm-hmm.
Are you surprised that they lost the way they did?
Yes, very surprised. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very surprised.
They also
they fired their coordinator. I was pissed about that. They fired their offensive coordinator.
Who's that? The Ravens.
But now,
what's the story? Because I mean, you besides being our basketball
well,
maven, you're deep in the pitch brain. Now, what's the story? Is the coach all right? What's happening with your quarterback? Is he 100%?
He's playing in
the
Pro Bowl tonight. He's playing in the Pro Bowl tonight.
Yeah, but who's the backup over there? I mean, you know.
They got Charlie Bosh, and two black quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Two black quarterbacks.
Okay. And he's in the Pro Bowl today. Who's the – we got you here. I mean, if D'Antoni does go, is there any talk about who may come in, or would they finally give Herb Williams a chance to run the basketball.
They probably give it to Woodson.
Yeah, Mike Woodson. Yeah, they're not going to
really.
They probably give it to Mike Woodson.
Now, Melko. So why would they leap to Woodson and not give Herb Williams a shot again?
Well, you know, for some reason, I don't know. He always seems to be overlooked. I mean, obviously, he knows the game. Obviously, he sort of layers on to the players. But I don't know. I don't think that Dolan and company will turn it on to him for turn it over to him.
So,
for
what you telling
reason.
Me here, Mel?
Woodson,
what you telling me here? That Herb Williams is a lifetime assistant coach. Is that what you're saying, Mel?
Yeah, in so many words, at least on this particular team, yeah, Doc. I just don't see Dolan and company turning over the franchise to Herb for whatever reason. It's not like
Here we go. Would they turn it back to Isaiah Melkosell?
No, Isaiah's not going to get it. Number one, even though he supposedly has a personal connection with Dolan, they take all kinds of heat. You know what the whole media circus is like about what Isaiah is talking against
Okay, Melkosell, telling it like it is. Would there be a better chance of Isaiah getting the job again as opposed to Herb getting it?
Wow, Doc, I don't know. There's no way.
No.
There's no way.
No,
to no.
No,
Dan's
Doc.
Not going to come back in any
that,
official
Doc, I
have
to say, that's
GM
scandal,
coach.
Doc. That's scandal.
Really?
That's why. Other than that, he'd have got the job. It wasn't for that scandal.
Okay.
They
now,
have
tell me
Woodson
something.
Right on the bench, Doc. He has pro coaching experience. He's known as a defensive-minded coach. I would say if they're going to turn it to anybody, they'd give it to him
and,
for
and
the
Doc,
interim.
Plus,
they start their
coaching a college squad anyway. He's coaching them a college team.
Yeah.
Because they're not meshing under D'Antoni at all, Doc. They have no leader. They have no leadership. They have no floor leader. They obviously they need a point guard, but the chemistry is just not meshing between their two big superstars at the moment. And Carmelo's hurt anyway.
Gang, we're going to close out real quick with Ed Greenpool, and then we'll be back with the mic on, lights off.
There will never be the kind of magic that you brought us back in 1969, and those just memories that are going to. I mean, it's like everybody remembers where they were, Steady Eddie. Well, I was there, truly. I was there in the beginning of 62, I was there in 69.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
And with that, gang, hold on. Got Mel and...
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth. It's that extra segment of Sports in Depth. Mic on, lights off, as we continue our bat special. Close these minutes on this show talking about next week's big Super Bowl game, New York Giants against the New England Patriots. A rematch of just 3 years ago. A rematch of probably the best coach team in football, or the guy seen as the best coach in football. Yeah, but that's a quick prayer. Dear Lord, Amen, darlings, and Jesus. Amen. Bill Belichick seems to be as the best coach in the pros, and his record, if you take away the Cleveland years, and he was so vital in that first Super Bowl that the Giants won as a defensive coordinator. On the other hand, Tom Coughlin has done a tremendous job. Here's a guy who 6-7 games ago, I mean, they said it was going to be a sweep here, Rooney. Both of the coaches weren't going to be back next year. And there's no question that Coughlin will be back, and if he wins the Super Bowl,
it's funny how things change so quickly, Doc, and funny how life is. Excuse me for cutting you off. I mean, when they were in the middle of that four-game losing streak, people calling for Coughlin's head. I mean, there's no question about it. He was close to being out of the door.
But I'm going to tell you something, too. Know what he did, fellas? He took the heat. I mean, I remember that game against Seattle. There was two games, the Seattle game and the Philadelphia game. And he said something I'll never forget, you know. He said, and you know, the press was trying to say, hey, man, you know, and so, certain amount of words, the coach, you know, you're not out there. The guys are not playing sound fundamental football. And he said something I'll never forget. He said, coaches lose football games. And when a team loses, it's the coach's fault. And I long said that a lot of times when I call companies and I salute the supervisors, I said, you know, I just want to salute you too as well as your worker because you're like baseball managers, football coaches. You know, you don't win games, you lose them. And Coughlin stood up and took the heat, knowing full well that it wasn't his fault. But he said, you know, coaches lose football games. And Melko, so you started and Dusty had dovetailed it. You know, we didn't think two things here to a certain degree. That we be talking about the Giants. Well, not that we didn't think, but a lot of people didn't think that the Giants. Well, we knew after a while the Giants are the best team in football, but there are a lot of people who didn't think the Giants, outside of Giants fans, would be in the Super Bowl. And more importantly, and you start off, Melko, so with Dusty right behind you, then we can do Eddie Cranepool. Nobody thought that either one of these guys. Well, okay, if there was one guy going, everybody knew it was going to be Coughlin, Melko. So.
Well.
that was the consensus. Ryan wasn't going anyplace. The Giants, the Jets were hanging in there, boom, boom, boom. But the consensus was, and you come behind them, Dusty, and you know it's true, Dusty. The consensus was, Dusty, the consensus was Coughlin was what? A dead man walking.
Well, Doc, from the very beginning that Coughlin was signed, let's go back in history. He became with a military general's philosophy.
There you go. Okay.
And training.
Couldn't get along with the players. Too much of a taskmaster.
Right. The biggest complaint.
Too rigid,
sticky bombers, and the shockies, and all the non-performers, and they wanted him gone because he treated us like we were going to combat. He was so rough and this and that. And where is Coughlin? He's still here going into the second Super Bowl of his tenure. If you're going to be a ball player and you want to be there at the top show and walk around with a ring for the rest of your life, you got to deal with a militaristic mind of a Coughlin who, militaristic mind, but respected and prepared their players and got them out on their own little self-serving habits and the little spoily attitude.
I'm glad self-serving.
Right.
Yes, I'm sorry, but you know you made a great point. Self-serving, spoiled attitude, like a bunch of brats, and that goes directly to Jeremy Shockey, who I thought was vastly overrated to begin with. He wound up with a Super Bowl ring, but to me, he was addition by subtraction.
Right. Exactly, and then they come in. Well, he's making us practice three a day practice with pads for what? Because you beat the awesome 18-0 Patriots. Now you have a second chance to beat the floundering Patriots, although I don't take anything for granted with the Patriots got their little practice bag ready to confront the Giants. And he brought the Giants to a second Super Bowl. What are they talking about? This man is no good. What are they talking about? The man's philosophy created, as opposed to the other team on the other side of the river, created a harmonious atmosphere in that locker room, doing the lockout, something that you guys may or may have picked up. Doing the lock, Peyton Manning. Oh my God, Eli Manning called some of the ball players and practiced in one of his high school or something. Let's create the symmetry. Let's create this connection. And one of the stories that came out, Victor Cruz says, I was surprised that Eli would even call me. I was a nobody, but he called me. And we practiced, and we developed the symmetry among each other. And Coughlin knew about it. And he allowed it by osmosis or by keeping quiet. And this is the man that is the leader. Are you going to get the same crap from the other side of the river? I don't think so. So what I'm saying is he was out the door to the Maras and the Tishes because of those prima donnas who did nothing. And performed nothing. Shockey's lucky he got a ring from the.
They wound up with the ring because what a prima donna he was.
Yeah,
and
he was vastly overrated. The thing with him was now, you know, he got the ring with the last team, but there was some things that was said. Doc Stanley Sports Dev, mic on, lights off. No, there was things that he wasn't allowed to pass on the field. He had to fly himself to the Super Bowl. There were some things that were done to him that he felt that were a combination of unprofessional and not family-like for a guy who's supposed to have been part of the family. I mean, that was his whole thing there. You know, I mean, you know, come on. I mean, I can't get on the field. I mean, I can't. I mean, you don't have enough money. And this had a lot to do, no fact, with Mr. Myra gone, because I remember he was the kind of guy that I remember.
When he was injured, you mean?
Yeah.
He was in the injured reserve. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, right. But I'm saying, you know, Mr. Myra was the kind of guy I remember that they would say, you know, they would want to cut a guy. Like about, you know, December 13th, he was like, hey, you know what, let's wait to the end of the month. Nobody should be without a job, you know, during the holidays. So, I mean, you know, there's two sides to the story. But you're bringing the point here, Dusty.
Yeah.
But, you know, what you're saying, Dusty, but doesn't happen to every coach. When the players don't perform, isn't it the coach who takes the fall?
Of course.
The manager?
The management, they do like Pontius Pilate. They wash their hands, get the rope. And it's the coach's fault. That's why I'm surprised that Moby Dick from the Green side is not fired, because it was him who destroyed that freaking team. And I still say that, you know. But he apologized. From now on, I'm going to keep quiet.
Let's go back on that. I mean, but and C-Wing said that. I mean, there were guys, and Hoopsa, you were here, Hoopsa Melko. So, I mean, the Jets lost a lot of guys. I mean, first of all, okay, the guy sent four guys to the Pro Bowl, okay? The guy had the best offense inside the red zone in pro football, and he had a 1,000-yard rusher. That's not nothing to sneeze on. I mean, the big problem seems to be here, Dusty.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with you first, Mel. The big problem seems to be here. And you know, maybe Schottenheim's not. The big problem here really seems to be, and you come behind him, Dusty, I want to come back and say some more about Bat, and thank my man Steve Accroach too. We're going to talk some more about Bat. Simply put, Bat is in the helping business. We help people. There are many players idolized for their power, speed, poise, or overall ability. Some of these players have fallen upon hard times. Other members of the baseball family catch a break and have a deal with health issues of their own or their children. Regardless of their statistics or whether or not they played a game in the major leagues, Bat helps members of the baseball family when they need it most. Most are reluctant to apply for a grant, but have no other means, and BAT is there to assist, to get them back on their feet so they can become self-sufficient once again. Some do not have money to pay for rent or to visit a doctor or pay for prescriptions or bury a loved one. BAT is a 501c3 charitable organization. Since Major League Baseball covers all operating expenses, BAT has zero overhead. Therefore, every dollar donated assists a person in need. Your support of BAT is greatly appreciated. You can also call at 1-866-605-4594 or go to www.baseballassistanceteam.com. Make your donations, and it's a worthy situation. And you know, getting back to the managers.
You're
talking about Ryan, but like I said, and this is the issue. I mean, he had a 1,000-yard rusher, okay? He's got four guys go to the Pro Bowl, okay? He had another 500 season, okay? And he had the best offense inside the red zone in pro football, all the pro football. Okay, the problem here, and we're going to start with Melko Soul first. Doc Stanley, Sports Def on the Blake Reader Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports Def for the show. Once again, saluting the legends. Birthdays in January, and I got to start with my mother, January 21st, so having birthday to her own, Justino Baby Lois. The 12th, you know, no person we forgot about, fellas. The 12th is our good friend who we just lost recently, Joe Frazier. Joe's birthday's on the 12th. Joe Frazier has been 68 years old this month. His good buddy Ollie, 5 days later, it hit the 7-0. Jackie Robinson's birthday is this month. Roy Jones Jr., the 16th. Dr. King, who we always remember, always the birthday of B-Hop and the lovely Cha-Cha, Roy Jones Jr., 16, Buddy McGregor, and Ollie share the same birthday. My grandson was funny the other day. He just turned 10. I called him, and he said, Grandpa, today I'm a decade. Today I'm a decade. But I think the issue here, Dusty, and we'll kick with Melko. So The issue here with the Jets, and this has been the biggest issue, and this may be why there's some dissension in the locker room, because you've got to start questioning the seriousness about trying to. Gary Ward told me the Yankees want to win with a certain type of player. And it seems that the Jets want to win with Sanchez as the quarterback. That Mel Cosell, telling it like it is. They got a new book about how Cosell out, too. Telling it like it is, leaving no stone unturned. I think that's the biggest issue. I think that's the biggest issue that you know, okay, the line, there was a problem. But they're living or dying with Sanchez. It's not like if he's having a bad game. They don't pull him out of games. The guy.
Well, the thing is
not,
Doc, that he knows he has no one to push him. He knows they're not going to put him for the backup quarterback that they currently have.
Mm-hmm.
And the
mm-hmm.
fact of the matter is, Doc, that they went on the cheap, as I have said on the show before, on the offseason. They also lost a lot of veteran leadership, starting with Damian Woody.
Guys that took up the slack.
Starting with Damian Woody. And
a lot of support mechanism, and they were the guys that hid his deficiencies. Correct?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, truly, you got to understand, you got to eat this like breakfast, man. Who was Sanchez's backup? Some recluse? I mean, that couldn't even throw a ball in a high school game?
But this is the problem, Dusty. That there were games that Sanchez was so bad, we were better off taking a chance with him.
Exactly, but they didn't do it, Doc. But why, I don't know. But what I'm trying to tell you is that they have quality quarterbacks, veteran quarterbacks like the McNabs, and I'll say it to
Every time you say that Dusty, I think about
over.
That show we had. You're talking about McNabb.
Oh, yeah.
You're right. McNabb, Culpepper.
Exactly.
These
guys were veteran mm-hmm. guys who could give you a run for your money, for God's sake. You know, and they had this veteran who was nothing or is nothing. And I tell you,
why do you think this is? I mean, I want you started, Milk. Why is that? Because, you know, I can't figure it out. Maybe he's married to somebody in the organization. Maybe they own some money. Why,
Dusty? A lot of money. They decided to put their eggs in the Sanchez basket. They gave up a bunch of draft picks to move up higher to pick them. They're paying them a lot of money over so many years. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but they don't want to look bad if this guy turns out to be a total bust.
Well, look, let me tell you something. I mean, come on.
I have to be fair in the fact, Doc, that he hasn't had the greatest supporting cast around him as far as offensive line either, just to be fair.
This year. Yeah. But then going back to that then, okay, but he didn't. I mean, you know, we got to the door, but if you're saying that, Mel Cosell, then, you know, he didn't do it last year then. I mean, he did have his chance.
He didn't do it three straight years. What I'm trying to make you guys understand is that here, you have a fledgling quarterback who is not as good as Cam Newton is, okay? And Cam Newton is 2 years behind Sanchez, and to me, he outshines Sanchez, and I don't care what the argument is. What I'm trying to tell you is you take the fledgling quarterback here, and you take a quality veteran quarterback, use him as a backup to teach him and come in when you're doing. I mean, I look for Sanchez to throw interceptions every game because that's what he was doing. There was nobody there to correct him. Nobody to threaten him, to sit him down and say, look, you're screwing up, man. Look, two interceptions already? Sit down. McNabb, come up, take a couple of downs.
Culpepper.
It wasn't done. Now, what happens? This to me is the broad brush of the color line, man. How many football players, I mean football people, let's put it this way, football people today of color are unemployed. And they could have gone to other teams. The Indianapolis Colts, who lost 14 of the 16, the coach was fired. Who's going to hire him? Now, Wade Phillips, who was a bum coach with Dallas, got a job as a defensive coach with another team. Okay? That's the deal. Now, how many of the unemployed players and coaches of color are going to be hired in the franchise?
That's the question here. That's the question.
Now,
how much, and we're glad about this, You sent Doc Stanley Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports Depth. The show, this is our bat special, as long as also a tribute to Jackie Robinson and Jane Bird. Dusty, how much pressure, in your estimation, was on our friend Jerry Reese when the Giants were doing well? I mean, did you see the possibility of him out the door if they didn't go to the Super Bowl again?
Super pressure. He's lucky if he didn't find the Ku Klux Klan knocking out the door. They didn't want the man in the, you know, this is what bothers me.
Too young, haven't heard enough time. Where
did
he come from? You know
exactly.
What I mean? Is he really qualified?
Does he come from? Where does he come from? Are these people the three blind mice, blind, deaf, and dumb? The man was in the franchise as an assistant for 15 damn years, man. You mean to tell me that he didn't learn the business being the second banana? And when the guy retired and they were going to appoint from outside one of the tissues of the marriage, said, no. I got my man Reese here who's been pining at the bits for years. Give him the shot. All of a sudden, the scribes and the commentators, who's this guy? Who's this guy? Are they blind, stupid? They know he's been there all along and doing and through other Super Bowl wins. Are you going to tell me that he wasn't responsible for some of those Super Bowl wins too? Come on. And so now he takes the full boat now, and they're critical because he got rid of the Tiki Barbers, the Sharkies, and the malcontents and built up a team of practically unknowns. Of course, now that they were floundering and this, that, and the other, but they got their act together and they wind up like Seaween says, wow, caught, but they're in the playoffs through him. What happens? This is the first team in football history that, as a wild card, wins a Super Bowl. Now, did they give him credit for that? I didn't see anybody say, man, Jerry Reese, look what he did. Oh, my Lord, he is a genius. They said nothing. So now they're back in the soup, playing the same team. For Jerry's sake, I hope they win. But the fact of the matter is that no person of color is going to get credit for anything. Let's go back to the college days, Doc. And you got me on a pedestal here, man. How many coaches of color run the Sugar Bowl, Sun Bowl, this bowl and that bowl and the national championship? None. There was a coach the first time in history that Boston College, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, got a black coach. And he made the team respectable, responsible, got them into a championship and all that. Where is he now? He's gone. And how many of these college teams flounder with the same coaching staff, the same staff, the same line staff, and they don't get fired? Now, getting back to a very, very personal, emotional thing, where are the Joe Paternos of color in these college things? Nowhere. Nowhere.
For years, the only guy you heard about was Eddie Robinson.
Right. But it was a black college.
Just from a name set, but you make a tremendous point. I mean, Doc Stanley Sports Depth on the Blake Rainbow Soldier Sports Depth show. What about our black coach who went to Notre Dame and got bounced? Took him to a bowl game
exactly
the first time, had the best record of the first year. Go ahead, Jesse.
That's exactly what I'm trying to tell you. You take the game, and I know you guys know this guy, Pete Carroll. With the 49ers, I think it was with the 49ers, they were floundering. He got an offer to go to college. I think it was USC. USC, was it?
It was USC.
If I'm not mistaken, I think he was Mark Sanchez's coach. Somebody correct me. And won a couple of championships. And he got tired of college, so he went back to the pros. Show me a coach of color who will bounce back and forth with million-dollar contracts. Nowhere. That's what eats the heck out of me, man. Understand? And now we're talking about Goodell, the commissioner of football. He was a football player. When they had that position vacant, where were the headhunters looking for a coach of color? Nowhere. This guy Siegel, baseball, whatever his name is, the baseball commissioner, he retired. He's tired. He wants to go home and all that. All the old homeboys got together, put together a two-year package out of bump in salary so he could stay. Why did they not go out and look for a baseball commissioner of color? That's
no.
You
bring up a point.
Me.
I'm gonna tell you something. I remember Fox Daily Sports Network on the Blake, but the network Rainbow, so the channel Sports Network, the show. Leonard Coleman was at the bat dinner, and he was the guy who took over, had the highest position of prestige from African American, took over National League presidency that Bill White had. I remember when Bill first got the job, and there was all this because Bill was the first African American sportscaster.
Exactly.
Art Russ might have beat him out for it. But Arthur didn't take the offer or came out. And I remember asking Bill a couple of things because the rumor was Bill had taken less money to get this prestigious job. And Bill said, "No, I'm not going to go down on the salary level." But I remember Bill left, and I see Bill's face now after about a year and a half. If you remember, Dusty, you got a mind like an elephant. You think Bill left. Bill resigned, and Bill told me something I'll never forget. Bill told me, and I'm not telling you what I heard or what I read. You know, when you hear Sports in Depth, and I also want you to look at that DocsNellySports.com site. A lot of baseball stuff there for you. A lot of the guys that were at the thing the other day. We've got some stuff for you. Bobblehead autograph, Tom Seaver Dahl, some Ed Cranville pictures, some Al Jackson stuff, some Willie Mays. And he told me, someone else, he said, they're not going to change. Okay? You look at the job that Tony Dungy did, the numbers are few. You know, I mean, football has been a lot more receptive than baseball. Remember my great friend Dusty Baker, you know, told the story about people talking about, well, there are not enough black managers in baseball. Dusty said, well, you know what? It's funny. You know, you guys talk about this. You write a story, and then it's done. It's done. You know, nobody. He said, "No, guys hire guys
yes,
who are their friends."
That's what it is. Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Yesterday's news. He said, "Guys hire their friends. They hire who they want to hire." So you know, he said, "You guys do a story about this, and you talk about it, and you talk about the injustices and all that, but you do nothing to remedy the situation. It's just talk."
Because it's the old homeboys network, man, including the media.
I mean, listen, Dusty, let's go back to the year that Girardi won the manager
year.
Willie Randolph takes the Mets
to the
division title.
One game before the World Series.
Let's even forget about that. I mean, let's just look at the fact that here was a guy who got fired. Didn't finish the season. And then he had a losing I can see the guy. And he won running away over Willie. For manager of the year. And this is something I said, that in the words of Howard Weston, I don't know where you at, Howard, miss you, baby, that said in touching, as we're in the 21st century, okay, and if we finally have had a president of color, the Yankees still are not remotely thinking about getting an African-American manager. They fired Chris Chambliss in a championship year. Championship year, they fired Chris Chambliss as the batting coach.
They come up with this garbage of every time, starting with Elson Howard. How many times, God forgive me for saying this, but for laughing, how many times did Elson Howard, when they were getting a new manager, interviewed for that slot?
Mm-hmm.
That was what we call in the corporate world. To get away from being accused of non-equal opportunity.
But you know what happened? Now you bring up a point, Dr. Stanley Spud. You bring up a point that the lovely Mrs. Audrey Chris Chambliss talked about was that you know the reason why you got rid of Chris and Willie was because at that time you didn't want Joe to step down.
And then the guy who
had to get the job by deduction.
Exactly.
Right,
well, that's
true,
exactly. You know,
because every time somebody's a heartbeat away, they wind up being replaced.
But he didn't have to get the job by, it was called attrition in-house.
Mm-hmm.
He had to get the job, and he was qualified to get the job, and he was right on the money because he was Joe Torre's bench coach. How many times did he manage a winning Yankee team where Joe was sick or suspended or whatever the heck you want to call it into a winning day. That's the quality. That's the resume that says this man can manage a team. All of a sudden, Joe Torre wants to say, well, we hate to see, Willie Randolph, the perfect gentleman, a nice guy, a pride of the Yankees, but if he wants to try his favors, his resume outside, we have no choice. We cannot hold him. How many
can't hold him back.
Can't
hold him back. All of a sudden, you ain't family no more, baby.
We can't hold him because it's not fair for us to hold him. Nonsense. They didn't do that with Girardi. They brought him in there and made him the bucket carrier for Joe Torre, because when Joe Torre left, guess who got the job? And come on, and Willie Randolph was left out there floundering. Come on, man, that's nonsense. This is the whole conglomerate. Where are the David Stearns, NBA of color? None. These guys own these franchises for years. It's about time we got a little suntans in these freaking places.
Hey, hold on, gang. Let's go back to Bat Day for a minute. And also, Valentine's Day, they have a Latin special at Lehman College. I got those names for you on the next show. But let's talk to a guy that was part of the Miracle Mets and was one of the original Mets. Good boy. Hey, you know what? Just listening. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Show, the channel Sports Depth is a show, part of our Bat special. Ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Rainbow.
Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network. And those just his memories that are going to say, I mean, it's like everybody remembers where they were, said Eddie.
Well, I was there, certainly. I was there in the beginning of 62, I was there in 69, and I'm there 50 years later when they're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the ballpark, so it's good to be part of all of
it. Eddie, who gave you the nickname?
I guess the fans did. You know, when you perform for them, we have the greatest sports fans in the world, New York.
Segments of Bat Day. We're getting ready to close out this segment of Sports in Depth with the mic on and lights off. And as you know, the two of the stalwarts of the crew, Justino Baby Lois and Mel Cosell. Gentlemen, real quickly in the closing minutes, we're going to let you start, Mel Cosell, first, and then we'll let Dusty, because he can close out for us too. Who wins next week and why? Mel Cosell. Okay, but that's, I guess it's just you then.
Well, I based on everything, Doc, you know how I am, analytical to a very great fault. Mm-hmm. I fear that the Giants have the, what do we call that in boxing, the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the performances, not so much that they beat them last time. You could put that in your sandbox.
That's history, it's history.
It's history. But because of the last two or three games, And remember I told you, I've noticed that through the years, the Giants are a team. They flounder during the season, and they look stupid. They look to, they lose to mediocre teams. And
they came, they came to the last Super Bowl the same way, just losing to the Patriots, going on the road, running roughshod over everybody, and say, hey, Patriots, we're back.
Yep, and they are road killers, so to speak, if I could use that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
They go on the road and they become awesome. They scare the heck out of you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they took the teams like that beat them, Green Bay beat them. But you got to look at the 49ers. You got to look at the records that they lost to these teams, but not by much. The 49ers was by a touchdown and
you know,
a bad call.
There were games that the other team didn't win, but that the Giants lost.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. That's perfect. And then that wrong call that should have been called, that was called by the referee in the 49er game, that was the clincher. And I think Eli threw an interception. Okay, now let's go back to Green Bay, the Cheeseheads. They lost by 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also an interception.
Winnie,
did
you ever come back, Winnie?
Hello?
No, yeah, good. Yeah. Well, okay, we're going to close. I thought Winnie had to come back. Give me a synopsis, and then we're going to roll, Dusty. Go ahead.
And Rodgers knew that he had to run that game, and the time was running out, get at least a field goal to beat the Giants. So what happens? The Giants come back, reinforce themselves, and believe you me, the catalyst is that team being so glued together is not only Coughlin, but I have to give credit to Eli Manning, the maturation of Eli Manning and how he breaks out of the pocket.
You know, it was Rooney, too, who said weeks ago, you know, we're not going to appreciate this guy until, like, Patrick Ewing, and he's gone.
And he's gone.
And then
he
we're
going to
say, wow, you know what? Because
you also got to look at the fact that he didn't catch a touchdown pass with the 49ers. They had him backed off. But guess what? He caught a total of 142 yards to continue a 39,
I knew you were going to come with the Puerto Rican thing. I knew it was coming.
No.
You got to understand
that was the catalyst that kept the –
Give me a score.
I'm not going to give you a score. I never want to go into scoring.
Okay.
Because you never know.
But the Giants win.
But I feel. This is Sunday. Next Sunday, I feel that the Giants will pull it out. I think that Tom Brady is shell shocked. And he's lost a lot of his bravado. And remember, he only has 7 of the original, and his biggest asset, Gronkowski, is a lame duck. So
if you hit Brady early, you can rattle him big time.
Rooney, real quick, okay, we got you back. We're very close. Okay, Rooney, who wins? Give me a score and why, real quickly.
The Giants, I think it may be a bit of a shootout since we have two powerful offenses. Doc, I'm going to go Giants, 28-21.
Wow, that's good. Well, that's a good conservative score. It's a conservative score, but it is a good score.
I don't like predicting scores.
You
ain't been down to talk to Gasuela. You'll have the whole score in first downs by next week. We're going to get on the horses.
Yeah. There you go.
Don't move. Don't move. We're going to let Larry call us out, and then Dusty, you will close us. Doc Stanley Sports Depth on the Blake Reader, Rainbow Solar Channel Sports Depth. The show, this has been our Bat Special Birthdays once again as we close out this month. The month ends on the 31st. Jack Roosevelt Robinson, first African-American to play in the major leagues, also the first African-American to win the batting title, first ever Rookie of the Year, and MVP. The 17th, service to others is eventually paid for your room on earth. Muhammad Ali. You see, I never get that glass. My name ain't Cassie anymore. My name is Muhammad Ali. He hit 70. 2 days before that, the memory of Dr. King. Life's most persistent, the most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? We say happy birthday to Bernard Hopkins and Cha-Cha. And on the 16th, the next day, Roy Jones Jr. Buddy McGirt shared the birthday along with Muhammad Ali. The 21st, my beloved mother, Vivian Pauline Stanley, my grandson, the 25th Tariq, my daughter, the second, Marion Borkins and his wife, birthday. We also can't forget our good friend who touches our hearts so dearly now. As we look back, the 12th of this month was the birthday of now, the late, great smoking Joe Frazier. With that, Larry Hardesty will close us out, and then Destino, possibly in English this time, will say goodnight to everybody.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
And before I turn over to you, I'll leave you with three quick thoughts. Live your life today as if it's stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for the service of others? Doc Stanley, I simply say from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. And now I hope in our native tongue, but who knows what tongue he's in, because he's 8 different languages. Destino says good night. So, Mel Cassell, we'll see you next week. And Dusty, tell everybody good night.
Good night. Mel Cassell, God bless you. And everybody, the panel left, okay, but God bless you. We'll see each other next week. And we'll hopefully, before the Super Bowl is over, so we can discuss probability. Maybe I'll give you a score next week, Doc. I don't know, but I don't like to predict score because it's two giants of football, the best teams in football. The playoffs are over. These are the ones who struggled all season to get to where they are today. So it could be a war. It could be a blowout, but I don't think so. I think it's going to be maybe. Okay, if you want me to predict, I'll tell you. It's going to be as close as their first game. Let's put it that way. Even with the missing pieces of the Patriots, I think it's going to be that close and sharp. It's the playing, the wearing down by the Giants that's going to decide the winner. Okay?
Okay. Someone who said that. And now could you say that whole thing once again in Spanish for us?
Buenas noches, todo el mundo. Y yo creo. Yo creo que los gigantes van a ganarle a los patriotas porque Tom Brady no es tan bueno como Eli Manning y también no tienen los jugadores que tenían anterior en el otro Super Bowl. Super Tazón.
Well said,
thank you,
well
Dusty.
Said.
Hey, Dusty, we didn't hear you. Could you do it one more time?
well, get out of here.
Gang,
God bless.
See you next week. Love you, buddy.
Take care, baby.
Nice.
Take care, brother. Oh, boy. Man, I love this hour. Okay, God bless.